Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Welcome to episode number 2 of the Modern Masculinity Project. I am your host, Brad Pankey. Welcome. Thank you to all you beautiful people for your feedback and encouragement after episode 1. I didn't really know how it was going to go or what the feedback would be, but, you know, you're all very encouraging, and I even appreciate the gentle way that y'all offered ways for me to make improvements. That was great. Appreciate it. I'm having a lot of fun doing this, and I can't wait to get more episodes out to y'all. If you haven't listened to episode number 1, please go back and check it out. It's a great conversation with Chris Lowe about being a father, raising a young boy. There's a lot of other great stuff in there too. So go back and give that a listen. And while you're there, also, please rate and review the podcast. That would really help me out. Ladies, you can continue to send me your What Women Wonder questions. You can email the show mmprojectpod@gmail.com or get at me on Twitter at mmprojectpod is the handle. Cool. So we're on to episode number 2. This one is with Ty Sorensen. And this dude really means a lot to me. He is just one of my favorite people, really, in general. It didn't really start out that way, or that wasn't my first impression of him at first. So we'll talk a little bit about that. It's a really interesting conversation of how guys kind of circle around each other and sniff around like, what's this guy doing? You know? So, it's really interesting to listen to, but, he's just become one of my, just somebody I really look up to in a way, about how to be a man. you'll see, just give it a listen and tell me what you think. But because one of the reasons, too, I look up into him and had to do with what I was thinking about coming into this episode. I had really been thinking a lot about culture and the pressures it puts on us, both men and women, to be a certain way, to act a certain way, to look a certain way. And what that ends up doing, it seems like, is just creating a lot of insecurity. We don't know in a moment how we should be acting or how we should look, or, you know, are we comparing to other people in a favorable way? Because sometimes we just don't want to live up to that. We don't want to be the thing that we're told we should be. It really kind of strips us of our personal sovereignty, which I think is creating a lot of insecurity and unhappiness. And I know this is pretty big topic for women, but this is also a thing for men too, that kind of gets overlooked. We do feel the pressure to live up to what we're told we should be, and it can create a lot of issues. So this conversation with Ty really helped me kind of smooth that out and really just start to let go of a lot of that type of stuff. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Episode number 2 of the Modern Masculinity Project, The Peaceful Warrior with Ty Sorensen.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rock stopped me for a moment.
We got there.
No. I brought it specifically. It's only like dark beer, so it's an imperial stout, but that's like a classic go-to.
Never say die.
Like super good imperial stout.
This is pretty rad. Well.
But it's pretty neutral. It's like not too sweet and not too boozy.
Another podcast, another beer.
You did one this morning?
No, I didn't. I didn't end up doing it. I had to reschedule. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, man.
Does it smell like campfire in here?
No, not really.
Damn it.
Maybe a little bit.
I tried to burn a campfire incense because, you know, when men talk, we talk around the campfire.
Yeah, exactly.
I certainly can't light one in here.
I just got we got a candle the other day from Target. They have like a new collection at Target of like super good candles, and they have one that smells like literally like you're sitting next to a campfire.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Manly candle.
So good. I love it.
That is funny.
That's like what my deodorant smells like. My soap for the shower smells
like.
Like
a campfire.
Just like rub in it.
It's kind of disgusting when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. There is something about that smell though that I don't know if it's just gets me because I grew up around it.
No, I love it, man. It's probably not for everybody, but
no. But man, I don't know if we talked about this before, but do you remember when I interviewed at On?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Have we ever talked about that?
I think once. Yeah, I think we talked about it once.
It was weird because when the whole thing got set up, I was told that there would be three people there.
Okay.
And it was all three women. I can't exactly remember who it was, but I'm just like, all right, whatever, you know, three people. And my buddy Mark, I was living in London at the time, and I was pretty stoked because I was interviewing for a new job, and I was telling my buddy Mark, and of course in London it was 4:30, so we went out and had a beer in the middle of work. It's like, let's go have a beer, celebrate.
Yeah.
And I was telling him about it, and we were like, yeah, it's three people interviewing me, and I kind of laughed, and I go, well, there's going to be that fourth random asshole there that I don't know about that's going to come in and, you know, throw me off.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of laughed. He's like, yeah, that always happens. It's always that guy, Tim, that shows up.
That's awesome.
And so I get in there, and I sit down, and I flick on the Skype, and there's one, two, three, and four.
A dude.
You. And instantly, I think my initial reaction was like, oh, shit, who's this guy? Who's this guy? And you were just sitting there like, you were pretty stone-faced.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if that's just his style. Like, he's just trying to get a feel for this guy on the screen or what his deal is. But throughout the whole thing, I was just so distracted. It's like, man, that guy over there. See, I'm like, are we cool?
That's awesome.
And it took me, I think it probably took me until we went to Alaska to get really comfortable and to figure it out a little bit.
Just with, like, around me or with the company?
Yeah, around you.
It's funny. I get that a lot. Like, I've always gotten that since I was young and in
really?
The workplace where people are like, I've heard a lot that people can be not necessarily intimidated, but think I can be kind of a dick.
Yeah. I didn't think.
Which
you were,
may be so, I guess, yeah. But I think it's more, I don't know. I think it's nice to like be a little bit more professional upfront and see, like ask, I have no problem asking people like tough questions in interviews to if they can field it. And then it's like, yeah, of course, like I'm not going to ask you this random weird shit when you work together, but it's like, I want to see if you can think on the spot. And like a lot of people I think have a super, direct, but open and like friendly interviewing style.
Yeah.
And so it's nice too, to have different dynamics, I think.
Definitely. You definitely, counterbalance their kind of direct, warm like mm-hmm. thing, which I thought I appreciated, but it was just like, I think some of it too is for me is like, as a man, sometimes I was like subconscious and be like, this guy, like my caveman brain
for sure
goes, oh, this guy over here.
I do the same thing.
Watching this guy.
I've seen it as we've hired new reps, and I think it's just like either an inherent bias or like instinct.
Yeah,
where it's like I find a lot of times when in any job, if you hire a female, regardless if it's your boss, someone below you, whatever, you're just like, sweet, cool, new person on the team, super pumped. And anytime there's a guy, you're like, this is competition. Even though you're like, we're on the same team.
Competition for what?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was just funny, just the initial reaction. And then once we went to Alaska, it was like, all right,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I like this guy.
Yep, exactly.
So you would experience that growing up, though.
The which part?
The just kind of people thinking you were kind of rough.
Yeah, and I was also super introverted. I still would consider myself an introvert. Like, I have no problem being extroverted, like for work purposes
sure.
and like talking at events and stuff. But by general nature, I'm a pretty introverted person and have, like we've talked about it, I have no problem with silence or like just not talking or whatever. And so it used to be compounded quite a bit when I was a kid, to where it made me super uncomfortable to like meet new people and talk to new people. And I sometimes I wonder if that was almost like a coping mechanism to like act tough, so to speak, maybe to like cope with it.
Where did you? I know you. Where'd you grow up?
In Kansas City.
Kansas City. In which?
In Kansas.
Kansas City.
So on the Kansas side. So Kansas City splits Kansas and Missouri.
Okay.
And I grew up on the Kansas side, about in a suburb called Olathe, which is like 15 miles south of Kansas City.
That's quite different than Oregon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, like culturally speaking, I mean, I imagine it was quite different for guys there, right? I mean, Portland's pretty weird and pretty special, but how was it for you then, kind of as a little boy?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a to an extent a little bit of a diverse place. It's, of course, you have like rednecks, like you would guess. Like most people when I tell them I'm from Kansas are like, oh, so like lots of people in camo and rednecks and shooting guns.
Yeah.
And that is a lot of people there. But there's also a lot of big business there in Kansas City. It's like when I was young, Sprint moved their headquarters there for North America. So they employed like thousands of people in Kansas City. So you've got some of those business oriented people. And then you've got the downtown Kansas City area, which is full of like small businesses, boutiques, coffee shops, almost similar to Portland. So you do have a mix of like super conservative and a little pocket of like progressive people.
Yeah.
But it's definitely more like, I feel like I grew up more in like a manly man type of environment, you know, where it's like people hunt and you shoot guns and shit. And
it's the Oregon coast.
You don't talk about your feelings or express yourself. And, you know, so that's definitely kind of the stigma, I think, there or the preconceived idea of what it is.
Sure.
Definitely holds up to an extent.
Sure. And you just kind of embrace that and roll with it when you're there.
Yeah, for sure.
Or did it feel like you had to resist it or you wanted something different?
Just something different. I was never much of like, I hunted a little bit growing up and shot guns, but you know, that type of stuff. It's funny. I think I've actually gotten more back into thinking about like, oh, it would be sweet to just be like a farmer.
Yeah. Seriously.
You know, whereas as a kid, I'm like, hey, get me out of here, man. Yeah. As a kid, I really wanted to move to like a city.
Sure.
Like New York City, Chicago. I was like, I want to get out of here. And I left pretty much right after I was 18. Mm. But that was always my goal, was like through junior high and high school. It was like, as soon as I'm of age to legally get the fuck out of here, I'm getting out of here.
Well, yeah, I remember as a little kid going to Kansas and just thinking it was so god awful.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's gray, it's flat. There was nothing.
And yeah, it's super flat. It's, and you get the harshest conditions. It's freezing cold in the winter and then super hot, 105 and humid in the summer. And then you do get beautiful seasonal changes there. But yeah, it's pretty harsh conditions.
Yeah.
Ironically, now that we've lived in Portland for a few years, when we go back there, Kansas City reminds me a lot of Portland. Like if you're downtown there is a huge boom, an influx of like the local vibe, t-shirt companies, coffee shops popping up. That's all like Kansas City pride type stuff. Yeah. So it actually kind of reminds me of Portland a little bit now.
Kind of cool.
Yeah.
I guess if you like Portland.
Yeah. But you know, that type of environment, I mean, it breeds a lot of drinking and, you know, there's not a lot to do really.
Yeah. I was going to say, cause you know, when I went there and now looking back on that, I can't help but think it's like, what the hell would you do around here?
Yeah.
But I mean, I grew up on the Oregon coast.
Sure.
Town of 2000 people.
Yeah.
So people often ask me, well, what did you do growing up? The coast is great. I'm like, well, we just found shit to do. I don't know. And played in the woods.
Yeah. I think the grass is always greener too. You know, it's like everybody, I think for a lot of people, you think where you're from is not as good as anywhere else.
Sure.
You know, it's because that's how it was always my mentality, was like, this place sucks. I want to get out of here. I don't really care where I go as long as it's not here.
Yeah.
And for me, I was always drawn to either the mountains or the ocean.
Mm. You came to the right place then.
Yeah. The best of both worlds.
Yeah. But I think you hit on something that's kind of dangerous in a way, though. That there's just, what we did was drink. Not me. I didn't drink a lot growing up, but I mean, that's what people did. It's like, what are you doing today? Well, I'm just going to go out in the woods and grab a six pack and go drink.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we did. I mean, I think it's shocking to me now to think back at it. Like I started drinking when I was like around 12 or 13. And never really stopped. Like it wasn't like, oh, I had a beer. It was like, we started drinking vodka and stuff when we were that young.
Shit.
And now, and it seemed really normal at the time because that was borderline like acceptable, I guess. Yeah. Not necessarily by parents, obviously, but just that was kind of what the generation before you did. And like it was still pretty common to drink and drive and stuff when I was like, when I was a kid for parents and stuff, you know, 'cause that was like just what they did back then. But yeah, it definitely was an environment where I started drinking super young and never really stopped. And definitely battled with some issues with that, for sure.
So within your friend group, it was just a group of guys. You go out and drink.
Yeah. Guys and girls, whoever, 3 years older, whatever. Like we hung out with high schoolers when we were that age. And it was like we, and a lot of it, that was because there were brothers and sisters of each other that were all within that 3 to 4 year age gap. And I was an older brother, but I was the youngest of a lot of that crew. So my buddies and I would go hang out with their older brothers and sisters and go to parties when we were, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old.
Just getting wasted.
Wasted. So stupid. And it's like crazy. Now I see like a 13-year-old and I'm like, I cannot believe when I was that age, we would get a bottle of vodka and just pass it around and drink it, you know? And it's, I'm not proud of it, but in a way I think it, I think it probably curbed some potential, like drug and alcohol addictions in the future as I get older. 'Cause in a weird way, I feel like I got it out of my system. So by the time I got to college and where it's really that party atmosphere, I was like, oh, I've been doing this for a while. I'm good.
So what, at what point were, did you figure that's interesting? 'Cause a lot of people just keep going.
Yeah. So, oh, I mean, and I did for sure.
Well, there's always a, we live in Portland, we're drinking a beer right now, but like there's always a certain point where you're just like, okay, that's enough.
Yeah.
And so like what, when was that point for you, or what sparked that?
It's, I mean, that point has happened a lot of times, you know, where it's like, I'm at it. And then it's like, eh, you know, it's, to be frank, I think it's really happened more recently in the past couple of years where I've started to say, okay, I'm in my 30s now, my career's on track. You know, I think it's time to maybe like take a next step. And, it's too hard for me to rule out not drinking, even though I love the idea of that, of saying like just stone cold sober, all like focus on career, family, fitness, stuff like that. But beer, as you know, is like so intertwined in my life and with Jillian, and I love drinking beer, just like the culture behind it and stuff. But I think in the last like couple of years is when I've started to slow down, and maybe a better word is I've started to have a little bit more control, which I definitely did not have when I was young.
I mean, obviously, like this beer we're drinking right now tastes really fucking good.
Yeah.
But what else? What else do you think drinking gave you, even from the jump? Was it like a community? Like I'm drinking with my boys, drinking.
Probably community, like you said, like drinking with the homies, whatever.
Yeah.
That's what you do. So it's like, I guess this is what everybody does. I'm gonna do it with them. Yeah. But also, I think it was a coping mechanism for me going through, you know, like growing up, my parents got divorced around that time, and there was like some family stuff. But also being at that impressionable age where you're not really sure who you are yet, you know, and you're just like still very pliable and moldable. And to me, that was just like a coping mechanism to make me feel at ease and not maybe like relieve the pressure a little bit of that type or, you know, that time frame in anyone's life.
Do you think at that age, 'cause I mean, I didn't drink like that. I never really got drunk until I was out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think at that age, like when you're 14, 15, or however old you were when your parents went through a divorce, do you actually like feeling that sort of thing? Like on a,
probably not really. I mean, in retrospect, I think you think that you're, what's the right way to say it? I think you feel pain and hurt and sadness and all like, this stuff, but really I don't think you're processing it.
Kind of like, oh, that sucks.
Yeah. I think you get, and that's why I think, you know, you're immature at that age, and a lot of it leads to anger, you know, like that was my coping mechanism, was get wasted because I'm so pissed, you know, at the world for doing me so wrong. And it's like, you just don't know how to process things like that.
And then drinking, of course, tends to make you a little
And then it makes you a little worse and, you know,
Yeah. That's a tough one. I mean, my parents got divorced when I was, I don't even know if I was one. So obviously I didn't have no recollection of that, but, growing up not drinking, I definitely remember I would go out a little bit, not much, but when I did go out, I still wouldn't drink. And I definitely felt other, you know what I mean? Like I felt a little outcast while I was there. Like, oh, you're not drinking with the boys. You're just here hanging out. So that was kind of weird.
Yeah. Right.
So, there's definitely some of that where you're just trying to fit in a little bit.
And I think that goes from the other perspective too. Like when people when you're that young, even though you don't, it's I think not conscious to you, but if you're not drinking and I'm like, what's up, man? Why aren't you drinking? What's wrong with you? I think that's me probably saying like, am I doing something bad that I'm not, should not be drinking, which you know you are.
Well, I think that's something that we like boys don't certainly talk about. Is you're constantly thinking as a boy, am I doing any of this right?
Yeah, right.
It's like, isn't this what boys do? Mm-hmm. Isn't this what boys do? I remember thinking that all the time and not thinking I was ever right, and it's bled over into adulthood. But
yeah.
But I don't know. It's you kind of go along with, I think, what, at least for me, with what my dad did a lot. It's like, but at the same time, I'm like, ooh, he did some stuff that I would never do.
Sure.
So I don't know if you ever had that when you were looking to your dad or anything like that for.
Yeah, I mean, I feel super blessed in that my I have awesome parents. Even when they got divorced, they're still great friends and never put any pressure on my brother and I to pick and choose or any of that shit. Mm-hmm. So that was really comforting. I always had a great relationship with my dad, and then we definitely went through a stretch in high school where. I think a lot of people feel this, that there's a point in almost every guy's life where you feel like your friends are really your family, and you lose sight of your actual family because that's who you're going to school with, partying on the weekend, and you have more FaceTime with them. And so I think you tend to think of them as family. And then I started saying like, fuck my real family. Like, I don't want to go to Christmas or do any of this shit. I want to go hang with my real family, who are my friends, who actually support me, you know, when really they support me. So we went through a super rough stretch, where we hardly even didn't talk really or anything. And now, you know, that we're the best of friends now that I'm not a dipshit anymore.
Yeah. That's, I had the same path kind of, and I wonder if that's something between two guys where sometimes you got to burn that shit down, or if it's a father son thing and then rebuild it into something completely different. Cause I remember, you know, my dad and I were pretty chummy in high school when I was in high school, and he had moved, followed a lady to Hawaii, and I went there my freshman year in high school and like lived there and lasted like 3 months because it's fucking Hawaii and I miss my friends.
Right.
So I moved away from him, moved back home, and but I missed him for a while, and he was just never around. Lived with my aunt and uncle, graduated high school, then got into community college and just was pretty much like, yeah, fuck you, buddy.
Yeah.
I went for like a month literally without contacting him.
Yeah.
And he would leave me messages and be like, dude, you know, you're all right. What's up, man? And I just, for whatever reason, I was just like angry.
Yeah, sure. Me too. And I had lots of conversations with my mom and even with some like counselors and stuff about anger and just being like, I feel super angry and I'm not sure at who or for what reason. Yeah. I just feel angry. And maybe that's just part of being a kid is you go through a point where you're so confused that its only way to unleash itself is through anger.
Yeah. A lot of it just comes down as fuck you, dad.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I ran away, went through all that stuff, almost dropped out of school.
Yeah.
You know, went through all that path, which I felt was very cool at the time.
Right.
You know?
Right. What was the runaway part? Well,
both my parents, my grandparents were pretty strict, you know, they came from like the Depression era and that stuff. So they were very strict with rules, and my parents grew up under those rules. And then those were kind of passed on to me as far as like curfews and what's expected of you. And in a way, I really appreciate that, because even at the lowest of times when I was being really, really shitty, I always knew like to course correct. And I knew what my values were and where, like really to be a good, like I never really crossed a line when I was in that kind of bad state where I really did anything really bad.
You had a pretty high bottom.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I had good set of like values.
Exactly.
Yeah.
My parents instilled in me really, really good values. So even at my darkest days, if anything, I was only, being shitty to myself, not ever hurting anybody else. At least not with intention.
So a lot of people, I always have this thing, and I've probably heard other people smarter than me say this, but sometimes people to change, they need to hit their rock bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And like my rock bottom is like at the tip of my nose.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
It doesn't take much.
And I'm just like, I need to change.
Right.
How is that for you?
I think mine is maybe a little lower, but not, I mean, I've hit rock bottom probably a couple times where I've broken down and had to, and you know, had to ask for help or figure it out because I've burned enough bridges that the help wasn't there anymore. Yeah. And you figure it out. Know. And, you know, like I was told in school many times by like teachers and stuff, I would never amount to anything.
Like literally like,
yeah, you know, and now, cause we were in, I was in that crew, you know, of school that was like the bad kids for a long time or perceived as the bad kids. We always thought really we're not that bad. But now to like look back and see that, you know, I went, cause I had no intention of going to college. I didn't go to college right after high school. So I went to, college in my 20s. But just the fact that I graduated from like a D1 university, have a great job and have actually made something of myself always just makes me feel good knowing that I've literally had people tell me like, you're not going to amount to shit.
Yeah.
And maybe that is another reason why when I was in high school, like I wanted to drop out my senior year. And then I met with our guidance counselors and they were like, hey, what if we can get you on track to graduate a semester and then you'll just be done.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's amazing. Why don't we all do that?
Yeah.
And then I went into like a work program for the last semester and just worked. And I was like, this is great. I'm done with school. I'm just going to work. This is what my life's going to be. And then after a couple years of that, I very quickly realized that, that's not where I wanted to end up for like the next 40 years.
I wonder if some of that guidance counselor stuff too is like, oh, these fucking boys just messing around, you know?
Well, and I also wonder with the U.S., I think our educational system is really broken.
Yeah.
I always felt really bored with school.
Sure.
Right? In high school. And that's why, like, I think I'm a pretty smart guy. Obviously not the smartest in the room, not the dumbest, but I'm pretty even keel when it comes to that. And it wasn't like I struggled through high school because I was an idiot. It's that I didn't care for it. I didn't like the structure. I didn't like the, you know, what was being taught in the manner that it's taught. It was just boring. It bored the shit out of me. I became just like a class clown and just fucked around all the time.
Of course. Do you ever wonder, think back at yourself as a teenager and you're just like, fuck.
Yeah. I mean, I would, just if it was me, I would slap myself in the face if I knew me back then.
Still, you little bastard. And I think you're right. And I don't think public schools are embracing that or figuring out, hey man, these little boys have so much going on in their brains. They're stupid little animals.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and I don't mean like intelligent, like IQ stupid. I just mean they have so many hormones in their brains flooded that they just don't know how to act.
Yeah. And I mean, I think like we talked about earlier, you're so impressionable at that age and you're so nervous about being the right person and fitting in and staying true to yourself. And like, who am I?
Yeah.
You know, it's like constantly like, I get so much shit from my friends and family because I went through so many like phases in high school of like hip hop phase where I would like dress like a rapper and we all thought we were rappers.
Right,
and it was
emo.
Like Abercrombie and Fitch and emo style, you know, it's like, Jesus Christ, figure yourself out.
Yeah.
But I think everybody goes through that to an extent.
Sure.
And I think that's one of the reasons, especially boys, I think act out is because they're under a lot of pressure to be something that they don't know what it is.
Right.
You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, small, like I said, small town, part of the culture, part of the, how we should act is, you know, you drink.
Yep.
The other thing too is sports, of course.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you know, I did running, which was, did track and field and cross country, was not exactly the most manly sport.
Sure.
But then I played basketball, you know, and it was just part of our thing. It's part of how we connected with through sports. I mean, that's just, it was an expectation.
Absolutely. And I did the same thing. And that was, looking back, it's kind of funny because even though I was doing all of this partying all through high school, I still started on our soccer team and we were a 6A high school. So we were at the top of the top in high school. And we went to state a couple years and, you know, I started and got recruited a little bit from colleges and was able to somehow manage that, even though I was getting like blackout drunk on the weekends. and that probably helped get me through some of it because you have that camaraderie with your buddies.
Sure.
You know, we practiced 3 hours plus a day, plus on the weekends. So we were together all the time, just, you know, making dick jokes, fucking around, giving each other shit. But then you also have that stage, which I think is really fun in high school where you're playing, there's girls at the game, you know, you're super pumped. You got on your cool jerseys. It's like jerseys are all cool. You got on your cool cleats, you know, and it's that whole part of it, which I think is super important.
It's really ego boost.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge ego boost. And I think in a positive way for most, for some people it can be maybe too much.
I've seen it too much.
Yeah. But I think for most, it's nice to get a little bit of recognition.
Sure. And I think, so I was a terrible basketball player. Like, everybody knows that. But I was always most inspirational, right? I was always the rah-rah guy and came in and hustled. And but I never really got much of an ego boost from it. And sometimes I never really had anybody tell me good job after a game.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of hurt a little bit.
Yeah, just sure.
As a boy, kind of trying to become a man, it was like, oh, I'm not really feeling this too much. And it was, I don't know, I've thought about that a lot. And you just don't get that validation.
Sure. And I think that even carries over into your adult life in the workplace. I don't think there's an, I think it gets lost on a lot of people that a simple thank you goes a really long way.
Long ways.
But yeah, I think that's in sports and in work.
Well, and then it's in sports too, especially in this is, I don't necessarily agree with this, but a lot of the time sports can be viewed as very male.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you get into something that you are perceiving as very male and you're not validated within that, you're just kind of, as a boy at the time, I'm kind of like, oh, well, I guess that's, this male thing isn't for that, not for me, I guess, right here.
Yeah.
That kind of sucked.
Yeah, and I was the same way. I played basketball for the first time in junior high. I never played in high school, but I played in junior high. I had never played basketball before. Yeah. Like, I honestly did not know the positions. I didn't know the rules, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd watched basketball on TV a little bit, but all my friends went out to tryouts, and I was like, yeah, fuck it. I'll go try out. I don't know. I can at least, like, I have enough athletics. I think I can at least, like, throw the ball around. And I ended up making the team. Surprisingly, I didn't think I was going to, and I was horrible. I rode the B team the whole year. Was voted best defense.
Yeah.
You know, one of those where it's like, you suck, but you have really good defense and heart, you know?
Yeah.
But I went through a very interesting thing that I think kind of speaks to your point you just made was I think basketball, especially, you know, basketball, football, hockey, those kind of sports are super manly, where there's not a lot of praise or thank you. And our basketball team was like that. It was like a bunch of the boys. Roughhousing around. But during our season, our head coach, got cancer. And that was a way that we all really became a family. You know, and I remember him calling a coach's meeting with all the players, and told everybody, and everybody of course broke down and started crying. It's our coach who we love. And also you're in junior high. So it's a teacher that you probably have in class. And then I do remember a shift from there of all of a sudden there was like thank yous and praise and like people would hug after practice. And, it's almost like it took this really horrible thing to make it, to let everybody drop their egos and let everybody know that it was okay to do that.
It's weird how like tragedy softens people.
Yeah.
It sucks that it takes that sometimes, but I don't know, especially for guys, it just seems like you need to be shook a little harder sometimes.
Yeah.
And maybe that affected people long term, but other men might have just gone back to closed up.
Yeah, sure. And I think for me, it's important. I think a lot of people might disagree with me on this, but I think it's as I think about having kids in the future and what that looks like, it's like if I have a son or something in the future, I want to let them know it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to, you know, cry every once in a while if something's not right or you're sad, or it's okay to show your emotions. Yeah. You know, as long as you're doing it and communicating in the right way.
Sure.
And you don't have to just keep everything bottled up, because I think that's the way I was growing up, was super bottled up. And then when you compound that with the drinking, I think I had a very immature skill set of communication and how to handle my emotions for a long time. And maybe still I'm even getting over some of that.
Yeah. And so before I get back into the kid thing, maybe later, but like, what was it like in your house for like, how did your dad say, hey, you know, go ahead and express your emotions? Or was it like he just didn't talk about it? Or how were you supported in that way?
I don't know if I necessarily remember when I was really little. I remember my parents actually, when I was in kind of that bad stage in high school, of them saying, hey, let's talk.
Yeah.
And me saying, I'm not comfortable with that. And I'm not sure exactly why I felt that way. Or maybe I just wasn't comfortable talking about what was bothering me, and that was my coping mechanism. Yeah. Just say, I don't want to talk about it.
Just a parent's thing.
Yeah. Or, you know, sometimes I wonder, even when you're that young too, if you can convince yourself almost that nothing's wrong. You know, it's like when my parents got divorced, we never talked about it really. And maybe you just convince yourself after a while that nothing is wrong when you say it enough.
And you had both parents in the house at that time?
Yep. So I had both parents living in the same house, and then they got divorced and my mom moved out.
Okay.
lived in Kansas City for a while, and then she moved to Chicago for work.
And so you were with your pops.
Yep.
Yeah. Single dad.
And it was bachelor pad for a few years. Dude. I remember looking back and it was so funny to think about it. My dad hired a cleaning service just once a week. He was like, we're not doing this. They're going to do the laundry, come in and clean.
That's so great.
Yeah.
That's great. So you had enough time to hang out with him and just dick around a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, when I was around, I wasn't around too much. Yeah. I was out hanging out with buddies and stuff.
Yeah. From as long as I can remember, my dad was always single. He had a few girlfriends that I remember coming in and out, but it was always just him and my brother and I in the same house. And, he played very much the part of mom and dad.
Yeah. Yeah. So did my dad.
Which looking back was, I don't know how he did it, man. He always created an environment where if we wanted to talk, we could, if we were comfortable with it, or
yep.
he was so honest about all of his faults and what the shit that he's done in the past. And I remember being like just a little kid and he's being like, you know, this is, again, I'm 30. So this must have been 20 years ago or more. And he'd be like, yeah, because I walked in on one time just taking the biggest hit out of a bong you've ever seen. And of course, I just was like deer in the headlights, like, oh, this isn't for me. This isn't where I parked my car. So I had to turn around and leave. And, you know, he sat me down as a little kid and he's like, you know, this is what I do. And he even asked, he's like, is that okay with you? But he, like, that's a very adult question to ask, a 9-year-old.
I don't know, you're supposed to tell me that.
I have no concept of it. Yeah, it's like, you tell me. But I was like, yeah, I mean, if you're okay. And that's what I remember. And
But just
that environment of being so inclusive to my brother and I. And my brother had a very different experience that I'll have to talk to him about. But I always felt like a part of that team. And I always felt like this is him and I. We're just trying to conquer this shit together. I think that in a way built that base of like, this is how you're supposed to act,
mm-hmm.
sort of thing. And, so I never really felt alone as a kid or a boy or without direction. So I don't know if you had that, what you felt like with your pops like that when you were alone with him, but
yeah, I mean, I felt like it was a pretty great relationship, very inclusive, with open to talk about whatever, except for when it came to drug and alcohol use.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting in retrospect, because my dad always played it up like he was just a straight shooter, super clean his whole life. And I can't believe you would do this type of thing, smoking weed and drinking and whatever, you know? And I remember at one point, after a couple of years of just getting reamed all the time for this stuff, that my mom was like, we're going to come sit down. I'm going to tell you some stories about your dad. And then I found out who he really was way back before they had kids, and found out that he was doing the exact same shit that I was doing.
Yeah.
You know, so then I think at that age, I felt like a little pissed, like kind of relieved and laughed a little bit, but also a little pissed that I was like, man, you're acting like this is the worst thing ever, and that you have no idea how someone could do this, and yet you're a hypocrite.
Yeah, yeah.
But now I think, you know, of course, in retrospect, as an adult, you know that when you have a kid, you just want them to be successful and be a contributing member to society and like just a good human being.
Sure.
So of course you're going to act like, no, we never did any of that. Why are you doing that?
Yeah, well, don't do that.
Yeah.
Wait to do that.
Right.
Yeah. I guess the point of me telling that story too was, circling back to what you said about maybe having kids eventually, how would you do things differently from how your dad raised you?
Man, you know, probably if I would have asked my 15 or 16 or 18 year old self that, I would say everything.
Yeah.
But now I would probably say I wouldn't do that much differently.
Yeah.
I think the times are a little different too, as far as like what's acceptable and where we live and things like that. But, I just want to raise super smart, common sense human beings that are contributors and have a good head on their shoulders and treat people fairly, and don't judge on bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something interesting though that you said, that, cause I've thought about that too a little bit eventually when I have kids, like, what would I do differently? Or even now I'm like, what should I do differently than my dad? And there's lots of things that I want to do differently, but I've never really, I guess, stopped and thought, well, maybe I should just try it the same way.
Yeah, sure. You know, and there, it does come to mind now. There probably are definitely two things I would do differently. One, and I think a lot of parents make this mistake or miss this step, is teaching children about finances and how to manage your finances. Yeah. That wasn't really ever taught to me or as taught as super valuable. And I think as a direct cause of that, I had crazy like credit card debt when I turned 18 because I didn't know how to manage my money. So sure. I got credit cards and I was like, this is like free money. You can just buy whatever you want and then you pay it back eventually, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, so finally I'm out of that hole. But and then the second thing is I never was pushed super hard to go to college. And I wish there would have been, whether I liked it or not, I wish there would have been someone to say, you got to go to college, man.
Yeah.
Because it was on me. I actually just made the decision without my parents even knowing and filled out the application and submitted all my stuff to University of Nebraska, which is where my whole family went. And then I just told them, hey, I got into Nebraska and I'm going to go to school. And they were just like, what?
Yeah, stoked about it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's always a tricky one about the whole go to college thing. Because the degree itself is a piece of paper.
Yeah, sure.
But the experience is... Mm-hmm. The experience made me who I am today.
And maybe I shouldn't even say go to college, but do something that furthers your education, whether it's like a vocation or something like that.
Just like an just organized system pushing. Of education, whatever
yeah.
that means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily have to be college.
But I think the just that whole idea, that struggle of what would I do differently? Like, I feel like I'm constantly trying to live up to what my dad would have wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard. But maybe it's some of it. I just need to embrace that. Like, he kind of killed it for what he had.
Yes. Just,
you know, and be okay with that.
Yeah.
But it's like, I'm always like, well, how can I do it better? How can I do it better?
Well, and I always kind of try to view it as like, I always want to be good enough and successful enough that my parents are proud of me. I think everyone has that innate feeling or want, you know, that they just want to be, they want to provide gratification for their parents that like, hey, we did a okay job. Because obviously it's hard to speak to it when you're not a parent, but I think really everybody just kind of wings it when you have a kid. Nobody knows what the fuck you're doing. So you kind of wing it and you hope that it turns out okay from what you've learned from your parents and your grandparents and friends and talking to people, whatever. I just completely forgot where I was going with that.
Yeah. That's all right. No, it's I think there's pieces to take away, but there's always like this resistance of, and I don't know whether it's just like, I didn't grow up with my mom, so I don't really understand that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But like with my dad, there's always like, even like I was saying with the interview, there's with you, whereas there's always like this first reaction of competition between men. And I don't want to compete with my dad but there's always that piece of like, do it better.
Yeah. And that reminds me where I was going with that previous one was, I don't think I've ever felt like I need to do it better.
Yeah.
What I wanted to do for a long time was like follow in my dad's shoes to an extent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it's like one day I just realized, no, I have my own shoes to fill and I have my own path to take that's different. I'm not my dad. I'm not my mom. I'm not anyone. I'm just myself. So I need to take my own path. But what I can do is take what I've learned from them, and utilize that information to forge the right path and hopefully one that makes them proud.
So that's a moment in life right there that I found pretty terrifying, is that moment when you look back at your parents and or grandparents or whomever and you think they're pretty fucked up. Mm-hmm. You know, your idealized version of them dissolves and you're like, oh my God, they were pretty messed up. And then you're left with this like, well, where do I go from here? I'm on my own path now.
Yeah.
And then that's when it becomes pretty tricky to start defining yourself, especially as a man.
Sure. Yeah. I can't remember what I was just going to say. Imperial stouts.
Imperial stouts will get you. No, it's just, you know, like the process of kind of when you make that change, I guess, from... you know, your dad is a guide or your parents is a guide and you're kind of looking up to them. And the moment you realize that it's like, ooh, they're pretty flawed, just like anybody. Yeah. And then you're kind of left with, well, I guess I need to make my own path here. And then your guide is kind of gone and you're kind of out there flopping in the wind.
Yeah. And for me, that was interesting because now that I'm, you know, I'm 31 now, and just over the last few years, I think I've started to realize more and more that whether it's your parents or your boss at work or your buddy or whoever, we're really all just human beings trying to exist and figure out what the fuck we're doing here.
Yeah.
Because there's not any, there's no book that you pick up. It's like, this is your manual to being a human being on Earth.
No.
Well, I would say there's not a manual.
I would say, some would call that the Bible.
Right.
But.
Not me.
No. I'm with you.
You know, but I think as you get older, you realize that, like, we're all just fucking humans trying to figure out what we are doing here and how to, you know, try to do it better every day. But for me, it was also a little bit different because, you know, I left when I was 18. And so even like at 16, 17 years old, to me, my path was like, get out. I'm not trying to be like anyone. I just want to get out of this environment.
Sure.
So I think I almost had like that early realization of like, my family sucks. I'm out of here. I don't care where I go, but I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
And then as you get older, you look back and you're like, I was so stupid. You know, they're just like, they're just trying to be good people.
They're trying their best.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have some of my dad's journals. He started journaling like in the mid 90s. So I have all those journals through like 2000. Wow. I think the last entry was 2010 or something like that, or I don't know, but I have all of them and I've read.
That's crazy.
I've only been able to get through them once, kind of right around where he passed away. I read them, but it was just like so intense and I never got back to him. But the main thing that he wrote about was just what you were saying. It's like this human struggle. You're reading the struggle about a man like trying to love his children and like being worried about his boys becoming men, yet there's like the conflict of him being a single father and, but him also being a man and trying to find a lady, trying to find a partner. And,
right.
You know, when I read that back, I'm just like, fuck, he was just a human trying to find his way, do his thing. And it's good to go back and see it. But at the same time, it makes you question where you are too right now.
Yeah, sure. And that's,
where am I in this journey that he just wrote about?
And it's crazy. It depends on when you look at that too, because Jillian and I talk about that a lot at home on like where we're at compared to our parents and just that type of thing. And it's like, if you talk about a career, like we're both pretty far ahead of where our parents were at when they were our age. I mean, when I was, to give a little background, like we were super, super poor when I was really little. Like my dad managed a McDonald's. My mom was just worked like hourly wages at a ladies' retail shop. So I remember like very vividly one specific example where I had like holes in my shoes and I was like, I need a new pair of shoes. Yeah. And they were like, cool, well, next month we'll get you a new pair of shoes. And to me, that was like the way I grew up, you know?
You get used to it.
But then I took this crazy shift where my parents got very, very successful and made lots and lots of money. And then it was like this total paradigm shift where all of a sudden we were going on all these vacations and like doing all this stuff together. So that was kind of like a unique lease on life that I think is like, I kind of appreciate it that I grew up relatively low income.
Yeah, me too.
Because I know what it feels like, but then because we had some money, like it like allowed me to taste a little bit of the finer things in life, but not be like a douchebag about it. You know, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure. Sure. You know where it came from.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I know, and I lived with my parents, obviously. So it's like, you know how much hard work goes into that.
Sure.
And so it also motivated me and gave me the hunger to probably on the other spectrum, like push super hard at work.
Yeah.
And that's actually a good point you brought up that I didn't think about earlier about comparing yourself. I probably compare myself more to my mom professionally because she was a vice president of a Fortune 500 company.
Oh, shit.
And so that is probably more where I'm like, how am I doing on pace where my mom was at when she was my age?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's an interesting dynamic then. Would you consider her at the time they were together, I guess, the leader of the household?
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I mean, I don't know financially. I think my dad probably made more money when they were together. Yeah. So my dad managed by that time, my dad was a manager of a big car dealership. So making a lot of money in that. And then my mom got in with a different company and was like a district manager. And so traveling tons and tons and tons and tons, which is why I don't like traveling for work because I have it instilled in me that drives relationships apart.
Yeah. Oh, that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But yeah, for sure at the end, I mean, my mom was making tons and tons of money and super successful. Mm.
So you never really, or I guess I should say, did you ever really associate being like with, like, I'm the man of the house type of thing with being the breadwinner or anything like that?
I think probably, I feel that a little bit.
So I should do this.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that a little bit, but not very much, to be honest. Mm. Like I always jokingly tell Jillian, if she could just make a shitload of money so I don't have to work, I would just stay home all day.
Yeah.
And make food and do the laundry and shit. That's totally fine with me.
I said this before, man, like not ashamed to admit it, but I don't tell people this that often that if I could be a stay at home dad, I totally would.
Yes. And I think probably way more work than either of us realize.
Oh, it's way more work.
But yeah, like that stuff doesn't bother me. Like if Jillian makes more or less money, I could care less because we look at it as a team, and we're both in it together. So.
And so it would, so that, do you think that came from the dynamic between your parents?
Could be.
Just how you observed that as a team rather than like.
Yeah, probably. I've never really thought about it, to be honest, but probably the fact that I grew up in a household where my mom made close to, if not more money than my dad at some stages here and there, that probably showed me that was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There was always, I mean, again, my dad was, you know, single or unmarried when I was growing up. So, but he always taught me this like amazing, to have an amazing respect for women.
Yeah.
Or just almost to like revere them in a way. Almost borderline, not fear them, but be like, revere them, you know? And I wonder if some of that has played in that, because I'm along the same lines. I just said, like, I would be a stay-at-home dad. I don't give a shit. Like, yep. It just sounds great to me. But I wonder if some of that plays into it.
Yeah, I have a very interesting dynamic when it comes to that, because I was always taught to respect women, treat them, you know, with the highest respect. But then on this other side, and like chivalry was like a big thing. Big. My mom always taught me like table manners, open the door for women,
big.
Go around and open the car door, you know? And so like, I still try to do a lot of that today.
Yep.
And I think that's a very valuable tool for men that's been lost on a lot of young guys that I see.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, I have a lot of family members who love like hanging out in the strip clubs. Yeah. Doing that type of thing, which always made me super uncomfortable.
Me too. Yeah.
I mean, I would always go with like my buddies for whatever, for bachelor parties and go hang out. But that was like not my vibe. It made me a little uncomfortable to have pay a woman to dance naked on me.
Yeah.
Like I don't like that feeling. It makes me feel not gross, but just like, it's just, it's not comfortable to me.
No, I'm with you. I've been to two in my life. I was the best man at my brother's wedding. Mm-hmm. We went out to one and he's like, Brad, I'm going to buy you a lap dance. I'm like, all right, man, it's your party. Do whatever you want. This is going to make you happy. It's like, I had the lap dance. I'm like, yeah, I didn't like any of that. I didn't like it. And it was just more the thing. Like, I guess she's there voluntarily working, making good money, but I'm just like, that's not for me. Saving up for that master's or whatever.
No. Yeah, I know. That's never been in my comfort zone.
And you know what the interesting thing is like, I think this is only over the last couple of years that I'm become so confused about the way things work anymore with like even holding a door open.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, am I supposed to, should I just let you get the door?
Or yeah,
like,
sure.
What do you, like, I'm not trying to say that you're less than or weaker, I'm just trying to be polite here. Yeah,
I get it.
Are you experiencing any of that?
Not a ton, I guess. I would say I always just try to be like respectful to women, and it's probably inevitable you're going to get that one.
Yeah. I guess that's probably
that one person who gets pissed for, it's like, really, you're going to get mad at me for opening a door? I don't know. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just opening the door to be polite. It doesn't matter what your gender or race or whatever is. It's just because that's what I was taught to do.
Sure.
And I think too, growing up in the Midwest, I think I've lived on the East Coast, the Midwest, and the West Coast. And I think that a lot of times the, like manners and that type of chivalrous stuff is really enforced in the Midwest and in the South. Whereas maybe not so much on the West Coast to an extent.
Yeah. It's a little more loosey goosey over here.
Like, or even like friendliness nice, too. Like just, where I grew up, when you walk by strangers on the street, you would look at them in the eye and say, hey, what's up? How's it going?
Yeah.
Whereas here, or especially like when I lived by New York City and stuff, like everybody just looks down.
Yeah,
I mean, and that was like very weird. I'd look around and be like, hey, why is no one looking?
I'm able to do it here quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
When I was living in Europe, it's not really a thing.
Yeah.
Which was tough. But yeah, when I was in New York, no, I didn't do any of that. And like, that wasn't welcome.
Right.
And I get it. But here, I feel like I'm able to do it a little bit.
Yeah. I think
it's
so
nice.
Too.
It's nice.
Here in the little Portland bubble.
In the little this fucking place, man. It's so weird. I was running by a guy this morning. It's pretty early. But I when I come up behind people, I never want to scare them. and I don't know if the guy, some people aren't homeless and some people are that I come by. And I didn't know if this guy was, but after I said on your right, I realized he was, because after I said on your, I just softly said on your right. And he just goes, it's dog shit. It's dog shit. And I just I kind of chuckled, just kept running. But
yeah,
it's mostly harmless.
Exactly. In
fucking Portland.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and going back to what you were saying on the kind of the holding the door open thing, and you know, I've tried to change my language around how I offer help too, mm-hmm. to women, where it's not like, do you need help? It's like, oh, or it's like, can I help? Or let me help you.
Yeah.
Or even let me grab that. So it's not like, do you need help? I try not to make them feel lesser than or weaker,
right.
But it's, I'm still like just a little...
Yeah, it's tough. We live in a challenging time, I think, with a lot of the, whether it's political or social issues that are going on, it's tough to know how to act, especially because now there are so many different groups that have different beliefs, you know, right? So it's expanded that way. But the way I view it is like, I just want to lend a hand or help as much as I can to make women equal to men, whether it's in pay, work, life in general, like it's just, we're just like we talked about, we're just human beings. So the fact that we would pay a woman less for doing the same job as a man because she's a woman is I just don't understand that.
Yeah.
And so all I want to do is try to be the best contributor to helping them, you know, seize that moment and become equals, if not greater than.
Sure.
But it's hard because, like you said, you don't know what language to use or you're not sure the right way to approach it. But I find, too, that if you probably just ask them, then that most men or women are willing to talk through it with you and give a little bit of guidance, at least from their perspective, which I think is always insightful.
Yeah, and I think even like this, what we're doing now, I guess that's kind of the intention of this, is to contribute in a way to talk it out with other guys, too, and see what they're doing or if they're doing anything or if they even care.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think you made a good point about actually just asking women, like, how can I help this situation?
Right.
It's not a comfortable question to ask.
Sure. But if we're going to make any true change, I think we have to get out of our comfort zones.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think a lot of men are complaining that it's like, whoa, you know, what are we supposed to be less than now? It's like, no, you're so far above right now that yeah, you're probably going to lose something to get to even.
Right.
So just get fucking used to it.
Yeah. And I think that's all right.
I think it's fine.
Like, that doesn't make me uncomfortable at all thinking of that. It's like, I just want everybody to be able to have an equal opportunity to be successful in life, in job, in whatever facet of life. Mm.
How is it? I mean, we work with a lot of women, and not that we don't want to specifically name names or anything like that, but like, how is it just the environment for you?
I love it.
Yeah, me too.
I love it, man. I would much rather work with 100 women and myself than work with 100 dudes and myself.
Yeah.
Because I think it probably goes back to what we talked about in the beginning, where we have this innate instinctual, you know, need to find competition amongst men. And so it makes me feel more relaxed.
Sure.
And more, I think like creativity flows better. My work flows more evenly. And I don't feel confrontational when I need to ask for something.
Yep.
Whereas in the past when I've had bosses that are men, it, you know, it almost goes back to what we were saying about how you keep your feelings up. It's like, I don't necessarily know if I want to bring it up because he might view me as being weak.
Yep.
Whereas I feel like when I work with the ladies in the office, like I can just be myself and speak my mind, and there's not a lot, there's not judgment because of that.
So I've had that experience. It's just been like amazing. Like I've been way more creative and way more comfortable to be creative, and I feel way more supported than I ever have.
Mm-hmm.
In the previous job though, when I was working for a small French startup, kind of the upper management was, we got into a lot of discussions that made me puff my chest up and just be kind of like, get defensive and get not angry, but like harden like a man. Cause it was like, it was very tough because I felt like I had to be defensive and I had to really fight for what I wanted and I didn't feel supported. And just contrasting the two, it's like now looking back, I'm like, man, we need more women working and
for
we need
sure
more women leading companies. And
I agree 100%
supporting us cavemen, you know?
Yeah. I agree.
Even so I'm not afraid to like say this. I go to counseling all the time. Like mm-hmm. every Friday I go leave the office and go to counseling, and I will never ever, and I've been to several other ones other than one in Portland, but I will never take a male counselor, which is stupid because like that guy is literally there to listen.
Right.
And he's been
like
trained.
Same skill set.
Just happens to be a different gender.
Right.
But I just, there's something in me that just never feels comfortable.
Yeah.
I just never feel comfortable there. And it's not, I guess it is like a judgment thing, to be honest. Like, I feel like that guy is going to judge me.
Right.
I don't want to be judged by a guy.
Yeah. Right.
I don't feel comfortable with it. But right. like having a woman there, like supporting me feels a lot better.
Well, it's the same thing. Like I'm the same way. And with, I've had to go to counseling a few times and I always had women. My doctors pretty much have always been women.
Yep.
Dentist, I don't think I care.
That's weird. Yeah. That's a weird observation because you're right. Maybe it's because I hate the fucking dentist.
Yeah, right. You're like, fuck it, get it over with. I don't care who does it.
Yeah.
But the funny one I think to bring up is a masseuse. I always would prefer a female for a masseuse. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
Because really when it comes down to the point of getting a massage, most guys are gonna have more strength to get down
sure
into the muscles, you know? For the most part, I would say. But it's like, I don't want some dude rubbing my back.
Yeah, there is some of that.
And I've had tons of guys give me massages. Sure. And it doesn't make me uncomfortable. It's totally fine. But if they're like male or female, I'm going female.
Yeah, I'm with you. I always just, for me, as woo-woo as it sounds, I always just get a different energy from women too.
Yeah,
like
sure.
I get
it's
way
like
more of a
nurturing
loving.
Yep. And loving, yeah.
For sure. And I don't, not to put like more pressure on women or anything in that respect, but I just think it comes through more naturally.
Yeah.
When I went to China, I had a really strange hip tweak and it was causing me to limp and I couldn't get around very well. And my buddy lives here in Portland now, but he was from China and he's like, oh, I'll just take you to masseuse and translate for you and get you in there and you'll be good. And go in there. It was like $20. I'm like, fuck yeah. For an hour, $20. And, he explained to her what's going on. Just said, oh, his leg is sore. That's all he said. And I get in there and she starts, I don't know what she's saying. She's speaking to me in Chinese.
Right.
So I'm like, well, fuck it. She'll figure it out.
I was pointing.
And, but she goes, she touches my left hip and she just touches it, kind of rubs it. And she goes, oh, very tired. Very tired. I'm like, yeah, that's the one. And she was like, yeah, very tired. And she just worked on the hip that was sore. But it was that thing where it was like, how did this, she knew that.
And it's like that this feeling that I know I've had before where, especially when you're dealing with an injury or something, you're just like, I want to make sure I don't get fucked up anymore.
Yeah.
I want someone. And it's like, then you have that moment where you're like, ah, this lady's going to take care
yeah
of me.
Yeah. I don't know what that is. Yeah, but I mean, it's good. The work environment, I think that's an important thing to have, that because otherwise a lot of work environments can become very male,
yep,
especially in sports.
Yeah,
especially
for sure
in sports. And I think we work in a pretty rare environment in that respect.
Yep.
I personally like it, but
yeah, I do as well.
But with that said, it does create challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Like we were just saying, it's like I hold the door open, but should I? You guys, you cool with that? Should I hold
right
the door open? Or, you know, there's times you definitely want to turn around, and I've caught myself before I make a joke or something. It's like, I better not
yeah
make that joke.
Sure.
But that's okay.
It's all good trade-offs.
There's definitely trade-offs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some I'm willing to make if I don't want to make a dick joke. That's a good trade-off to make.
Or you just wait till after the meeting and be like, hey, man, I thought of a great dick joke.
I know. Great dick joke here. Oh, man. Yeah, there's, I guess, the other thing I've observed kind of like in our, in the workplace with you, and then just personally too, is like, you definitely have this, to me at least, you have this inner warrior though. You have this inner, like, man, this warrior man. Yet you do it in a way that's not like puffing your chest.
Hmm.
And I don't know if you've ever like thought about that or anything. Like, how you contain your showing of masculinity into this, like, just like you're just a dude. And I wonder how, if you've ever thought about that, if you've been conscious of that, or if you've ever had any feedback like that.
No, definitely not.
Cause I mean, like, even like, I love the way that you do like your Instagram shit with your, not shit, but your Instagram stuff with your, like, you're working out.
Oh yeah, sure.
And to me, I don't find that to be like, look at this fucking guy over here.
Yeah, like bro-y. And that's
I
don't think about that when I post it. Cause like, I even posted one when we first got on this new kick that we're doing. That was about like, it's time to change my life. And I've been dealing with alcohol issues, and it's like, it's time to make that next step. And I posted it, and the next morning I got so self-conscious about it, I deleted it.
Oh.
But I try to approach it from like, I just don't want to be like a bro-y dude, you know, but I try to approach it of like, I enjoy working out. I like lifting weights and stuff and running and all that stuff too. But I also have done tons and tons of, I mean, just talking about this, I've done tons and tons of research about weightlifting over the last couple of years, and I've learned a lot. And I always like to share knowledge, especially because it's like, you go to the gym and you see so many people with bad form and just like doing weird shit that doesn't really, it's like injuring them. And Instagram, I think, is a great platform to share that type of knowledge. But I try to do it in a way that's like, I try not to be douchey about it.
You don't. You're just not.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a line for men where it can be like, bro.
Yeah.
Bro. Yeah. Exactly. You're just looking like a fucking, you're just out there getting
and swole. I also just try to have a sense of humor. Like, I know that I wear cutoff t-shirts every time I work out and people give me shit about it, but I just don't care. Like, it's super comfortable to me. And sleeves are fucking restricting.
Yeah.
And so rather than being like, fuck you, don't make fun of me because I'm wearing a sleeveless shirt, I just laugh. It's like, I know I wear a sleeveless shirt every time I work out and people think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Or the fact that I carry like a gallon jug around all the time.
Yeah.
People think that's fucking crazy, but it's what I've found, that's the easiest way for me to stay hydrated.
Yeah.
You know, cause otherwise I'm filling up these 16 ounce clean canteens 20 times a day. And I can't remember how much water I drank, and I'm trying to drink a specific amount. And so my coping mechanism as I've gotten older and more comfortable with myself is just to like poke fun at myself and be like, I know this is ridiculous.
I know this is,
but it's what works for me.
Sure. And it, I think there's like, You talked about using Instagram as like, it's a good medium for that. But like, there's also a fine line for men between like trying to just be a man, like be that inner warrior. Cause embracing your inner warrior, yet not being douchey, not being aggressive. It's a hard balance. It's a really,
it is a hard balance. And I don't think anybody really does it perfectly, but I also have a background where, you know, like I was a Boy Scout and I lived up in the mountains for a couple years and I hunted when I was a kid. And, what else? You know, I got like super into survival tactics and read tons and tons of books on like surviving. And I thought about at one point, like trying to become a Navy SEAL or a Green Beret Marine or something like that. I definitely have that side of me.
Yeah.
Like it's a great example. Jillian, we were talking about it the other day and it came up if like we ever went to war. And I was like, if we ever went to war for a legit reason, I would have no issues going, you know? There's like that side of me that is kind of like wants to be manly through that means, I guess, or maybe that's not the right way to put it, but like, I love being outdoors and getting dirty and like being able to like make shit and build shit. And
like I said, it fucking smells like a campfire.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. And I think most guys want to feel that, but I also was raised to be super nice to women and try to treat them respectfully. And so I always try to find a balance of somewhere in between all the craziness.
And so I think one of the problems is we definitely have boys will be boys, you know, culture. That's a problem. But how do we let boys be boys in a healthy way? I mean, I'm not expecting you to solve that problem, but how do we let them find their little inner warrior?
It's tough, man. I don't know. Holy shit. That's a tough question.
I'm even thinking back to when you said that the school just, like, you're bored. You're a little boy who's bored because you needed to go outside and fucking play. That's probably it.
Yeah, exactly. I think probably a lot of it comes from parenting, I guess, when you're really young and impressionable, because once you get outside of that, it's really out of their control when you're in school. And that's like, that's a government run system, you know, when you really break it down. So it's like, there's not, you can't really change much of that unless you're like homeschool your kids.
Yeah.
I think it's more about, for me, I think when I think about all this, I don't have an answer, I guess, but
it's not an easy question.
But I
it's
guess not. The thing that comes to mind is like making sure that when you are raising kids that you teach them really solid values and like the difference between fundamental right and wrong, so that when they get into decisions, they can try to make the right decisions, or at least, you know, it's like if you almost use the example of like finding consciousness, like just questioning something is like a step in the right direction.
Sure.
And that's what I think we need to get as people, is like
comfortable
just questioning what we're doing instead of following the norm, saying like, hey, maybe my dad yelled at my mom and now I yell at my girlfriend, but does that mean that it's right? Or like, maybe I should not be doing that. Whereas now it's like, well, that's what he did, so that's what I'm going to do. That's fine.
Well, that actually matches perfectly with the stat that I just saw, where it was like, 72% of all boys are told what a man should be like.
Yeah, sure.
And I wonder what percent of those 72% question that.
Well, how many times as a kid have you been told or heard someone say like, men don't cry, like stop crying.
Yeah. I've seen,
get up and brush it off.
With my dad, I've seen him cry. And so we embraced it.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I was an overly sensitive child. I'm an overly sensitive adult man, but, but then again, I've seen the other part of my family where it's like the men barely talk, let alone cry. So there's like, I've seen both. And yeah, I think you said it though. It's just teaching kids to question whatever they hear could be critical.
Yeah. And that, I mean, goes to the far reaches of like with this fake news epidemic that's going on now. It's like, you gotta question everything.
Yeah. Well, then too, where did you learn to question things mainly? Or where did you learn not only question things, but where to start by learning how to find answers?
Man, I mean, obviously, I think when you're little, you learn to just ask your parents.
Yeah.
I've always been very curious, though. Like, I always remember being a kid, and when something, whatever it was, I would just be like, well, why is it like that? Well, why do they do this? Well, why would they? And I think that's why now, like in my professional career, why I'm always lean towards being analytical with things and looking at data sets, is it's like finding patterns and saying, well, what if we disrupt this pattern?
Yep.
Like using the analogy of, you know, if you're in a meeting with 10 people and 9 of the people say, yes, let's go for it, I think it's the job of the other one person to say, no, let's not do it. And here's why, even if they're wrong, but just to say, let's not leave any stone unturned.
Yep.
And that's just always the mindset that I've had growing up. And so I question everything.
And it can be terrifying to be that 1 out of 10.
Yeah, totally.
It can be. And sometimes people just keep their mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the place that I really learned how to do this, and this goes back to what you were saying, I wish, about the college thing, is I learned how to research things and ask questions in college.
Yeah, sure.
And it's not necessarily like, I was an exercise science major. So it's like I can get on PubMed and find you a research journal article that's like, okay, this is a good, I can evaluate the study. Yeah, this is a pretty solid study, gives us good information. But it's just more than that. Like the idea of questioning things bleeds over into all parts of my life now.
Sure.
Even if I have a fucking thought in a moment, I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Hold on. think about that for a second. Is that how you really feel, or are you just having a tough day?
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I definitely learned, I mean, I was an environmental science major in college, so lots of science. Research papers and stuff, and that definitely teaches you how to ask questions and research. But then when you start doing your own research, then you're like, oh my God, A went to B. Is this going to go to C like I thought? Or maybe it's going to yield a different result that I had no idea even existed.
Yeah.
And that, I think, definitely transitions over.
For sure. And I think that's what we need to be teaching people, is just how to be a little bit more critical. I mean, some of these, like you mentioned Facebook and fake news, where it's just like people retweeting shit or people reposting stuff and being like a meme, and they're acting like it's truth. And the meme is just like, well, it's like, what? It's not even a...
Well, like the other day,
I
saw a post the other day on Facebook that was like, if you're ever getting robbed at an ATM, just enter your PIN number backwards and it freezes the money in there so they can't pull it out and it notifies the police. And I was like, there is absolutely no fucking way that is true. Or everyone would know this, right?
Yeah.
And so I looked it up, and of course it's not true, but it's like, then you see all these people reposting it like it's truth. And I'm like, now if someone gets into a shitty situation where they're being robbed, they're going to be super calm and punching their PIN code backwards. And who knows what that's going to end up.
Well, and what a weird like confluence of events we've had, where you have like Twitter culture, where it's like people don't want to read past 140 characters. Yeah. I know it's 280 now, whatever. But people's attention spans doesn't get past the fucking headline.
Yeah, I mean,
so you read a headline and it's like, that headline doesn't even describe what's in the article half the time.
And that's, I think that I've noticed it in myself just over the past 10 years, where it's, you know, I felt it the other day. I went to grab lunch and I forgot my phone at home.
Yeah.
And I had to wait like 15 minutes for my lunch to be made. And I just sat there and I'm looking around. Number one, everyone's on their phones, of course, duh. But number two, I felt myself feeling anxious, like feeling like people were looking at me because I wasn't on my phone.
Yep.
And I was like, man, this, I never would have felt like this back in the day. It was like, it was normal. You just sat there and like spaced off in a, it's like stared off into space while your food gets made. But now I was like, I think people are looking at me because I'm sitting here and they probably think I'm some fucking weirdo that's sitting here without a phone. So that's one thing that I think is crazy. I mean, I spend at night, we'll watch TV or something after we make dinner, and I'll check Instagram every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like out of a nervous tick.
Like, what are you missing?
Yeah. You know, and I hate it. But also I think we're in this really weird spot now where people are afraid to show like vulnerability and weakness. You know, it's like, I read it. I think it was best said the other day when I was reading this article about it, and they were like, Instagram, Facebook, all these social media channels are just a highlight reel of people's life.
Yeah.
Like nobody ever says like, hey, I was trying to do A and I didn't get there at all. I fucked it all up, man. And I did not do well.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause you're like that doesn't make sense for someone to post that, but really it's okay to fail and acknowledge it and learn from it.
People like validation.
Yeah.
I mean, we're humans.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm guilty of it as well. Look at my Instagram feed. It's not like I'm having a bunch of negative stuff.
No, and it's not like an accusatory me saying that, but like we definitely, I mean, I don't post on Facebook really anymore.
Yeah. I don't either.
I just, if I do, it's very like, I posted an article the other day that just talked about how Oregon closed this like gun control loop that was in there about domestic dispute abusers, like having to get extra background checks or whatever. And I just put I Heart Oregon.
Yeah.
And of course there was like, you know, a comment on there I just didn't want to deal with. And it just wrote, I love you.
Yeah, exactly.
Just walked away. You know, because it's like, this is why I don't post here.
Yeah, exactly.
There's just too much going on. But every so often I do get on Twitter and I'll tweet just a joke. I'm just on there for jokes.
Yeah.
I'm on there for jokes and news.
Nice.
Up to the date, and I'll tweet a joke and it'll get like, I've had, you know, get over like 100 likes.
That's awesome.
Like, ooh, that feels good. Like you said, it's crazy. It's like, that's awesome.
Right.
It's like,
you want the validation. It's, yeah, it's crazy. It's like one of the pictures one of the videos that I posted on Instagram of me working out the other day got like 800 views. And I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like questioning whether to even take it in the first place. But then I was kind of like pissed at myself that I was checking my Instagram so much to see like...
To see the likes.
750. All right, 15 minutes later, 765. Fuck yeah, this is the highest viewed post I've ever had. You know, it's like, who fucking cares?
Who fucking cares?
Right?
Yeah, it's still funny, like... The jokes that don't hit, I'm like, still jokes, still funny. Yeah. Still funny. Yeah, I had one of, I think one of my best ones not to just like brag about it, but it was like, it was funny. Like, it was Kellyanne Conway and she was holding two white signs and somebody had blanked them out. So, you know, the ones that they can write whatever yeah. you want. And I had one of them just said Putin and the other one said poutine. And awesome. Her face was just like, she looked like an idiot, but I don't know why, but people That's just awesome. Thought it was like, hilarious.
I don't know the difference.
Yeah. But it's just, it does feel good. And I wonder, you know, it clearly is affecting young people to the point where, like, if they're not getting that validation through that social dopamine. Media, they're not getting that dopamine. They're not getting it anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's just causing people.
Yeah. I saw on the news the other day that, I think it was high school kids now spend 9 hours on their phones a day, which is crazy. I don't even know how that's possible.
And if that's the case, which, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, I guess. I don't know how it's possible, but I guess it wouldn't surprise me. Like, where else are they getting love?
Right.
How are they getting love if they're just on their electric device all day?
Well, and I think I told you the story from that new HBO show this weekend when we were chatting.
Yeah.
There's that new HBO show, and there was a scene in it the other day where it's a brother and a sister, and the brother just hooked up with this guy, and she's like, well, where did you meet him? And he was like, or she's like, where'd you meet him? Like Tinder, Bumble, starts listing off all these dating apps. And he's like, I met him in a coffee shop. And she's like, what, you monster? Yeah. Like who meets people in real life?
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's so foreign to me. But we live in an age where that's the norm now, which is just crazy to me, I guess, but not to others.
Oh, I've said this to so many people and I mean this. It's like, I need a fucking hug every so often.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean? I don't like I will give away all my Twitter likes and everything just for a fucking hug sometimes. I think people are so enamored with social media and they're on their devices all the time and they're not meeting each other in person anymore that they're just not getting a hug sometimes. And that sounds like an oversimplification, but like humans need to be touched.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, we're still cavemen and we were, you know, evolved to be touched and stuff like that. So it's just, I wonder how much of that is factoring into
probably
anger,
a lot,
just anger.
Yeah. And it's crazy too with social media now, because you have people on there who you've literally never met, but you feel like you know them, which is such a crazy feeling as well.
Especially with podcasting.
And we've had, Jillian and I have like some friends that we've met that we were friends with for like a year or so on Instagram, and then meet them and it's trippy because you're like, I feel like I know you, but this is the first time we've actually ever sat next to each other and met. So it's very, we live in a crazy time.
Yeah.
This is frankly a bit out of my comfort zone.
It is. I mean, seriously, we're talking about all this, like just no interaction.
Yeah.
And as like me, I mean, I'm an introvert to the core, to the point where it's like this right here, like a one-on-one talk. Ooh. This is my comfort zone.
Yeah.
But like you get me in a group and it's like, no, it's like, or you come out to a party. It's like, nah, I'll just stay home. So like the fact that there's just like less one-on-one stuff going on and just less, just that can hurt.
Mm-hmm.
That can hurt
for sure.
And even as an introvert, I'm like pretty introverted. I mean, I can go do, like you said, I can go do the work thing and stuff like that, but being introverted as a male is pretty tough too at times.
Well, and it's funny, I think, because I've had it happen a few times where I force myself to be extroverted at work when I need to be for events and do things. And I've had people that see me in those settings and then we'll like go grab brunch with someone and I'm meeting someone new or whatever. And I sometimes get a little awkward in situations like that. And I just, it's because I don't know what to say.
Sure.
Right. And because like we've talked about, I'm completely comfortable with silence. Yep. I guess my default is just to be silent or just to be like, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And people probably think I'm a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, I don't really want to talk about the weather.
Yeah.
I don't really care. Yeah.
But, I've been working on trying to be better about, you know, being more extroverted when I meet people and having questions that I can ask them if I like run out of something to say, which sounds crazy that you'd have to like prepare for social interaction. But I've definitely done it like a couple years ago where I was like, what's like a good list of questions? Like if I'm in a social situation and I don't know what the fuck to say, but I just have like this list of questions that can like jumpstart a conversation and then we go into it and I have no issues. But sometimes it's like that initiation. I'm like, I don't know what to say.
When I feel like too, is like people look, you know, as a guy, it's like, hey, man, you need to take the reins here.
Yeah.
And it's like, fuck, dude, I'm not taking the reins of this conversation. Like, yeah. If you want to talk about a deeper subject, like, I'm all in for it in a smaller setting. But otherwise...
Well, it's funny, too. I used to have... I don't really do it much anymore, but I used to have this coping mechanism with... I used to be a lot worse with being introverted, where I got really uncomfortable around groups of people. And I started to do this thing where I would tell myself that I was like this really popular person that had tons of like swag and carried himself really confidently and always knew the right thing to say. And by telling myself that, like, sometimes I would just become this person just by being like, okay, I'm going into like a social setting. I just got to be this dude. And then people were like, man, you're so like upbeat and easy to talk to. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not really.
Yeah, but no.
I just like pretend and play this character.
Yeah.
And so that too was like, I've always tried to not really rely on that and be more true to myself, but be more comfortable with just chatting with people.
Do you think people just revere power? Like, do you think if it's a projection of like,
yeah, I think people are drawn to it for sure.
Yeah. Do you think more so men than women? Like, if you like, for me, for us, just for men, if we look at, say, Richard Branson, let's take an example that's not an evil fuck.
Right.
And we look at
that
Richard.
That we know of,
right? Well, yeah. Okay. Fair enough. But, you know, good dude, but like powerful, successful.
Yep.
Like, I admire the guy. But it's like, well, why do I admire that guy? Because he's powerful and rich,
because you can relate to him.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you can put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
Whereas if you look at, you know, a female CEO, I think that's not as easy to relate to. Although you could be envious of their success and want their material things they have and want their position. It's harder for me to say like, oh, just like see myself in their shoes.
Yeah.
Whereas if I see like a successful guy that just has like that confidence and that walk about him, you're like, ooh, like that's kind of what I want to be like.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, obviously, like, I don't know what it's like to be a woman.
Yeah, sure.
But at the same time, it's just kind of like, why don't I have the same... I guess I don't know if I do. I don't know if I can name any women in that position, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know, like the CEO of Hewlett Packard. I don't even remember what her name was, but I don't think I'd think of her in the same light. I mean, that's probably a weak spot on mine, but like, it's just different.
Yeah.
There's definitely a reverence for power that men have, I think, for other men.
And you see it, like a great example I can think of is when you're at our age where you're starting to get your career going and you're not at the bottom, you're not at the top, you're just kind of slowly chipping away that middle tier of like the professional life. And as much as I try to tell myself that like material goods, I don't care about, it's whatever. I don't care about making money. You know, you got to pay the bills, of course, but I'm like, I don't care if I'm fucking rich. But then I have these friends that I grew up with that some of them are executives and driving Ferraris.
They've
and you see that and you're just like, fuck.
Yeah. What am I
do kind of, what the fuck am I doing over here?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, even you coming over here, I'm like, well, I don't really have a table. I don't know. It's like my place.
Don't,
is pretty,
I don't have a table either.
My place is pretty minimal, and I'm like, well, we don't have a table to put our beer on. And I mean, some of that is the same thing. With me, some of that is me internally thinking, where the fuck am I going? Where am I?
But it's all. It depends on your perspective too, because you know, like the way that we view people that might be more successful than us, there's probably people that view us as being more successful than them.
True.
Right. So there's that. It's a very interesting dynamic.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like you said, it's interesting though, when you put on that facade of like, oh, hey, look at me, guys. You know, you get into that party and you're like this extroverted guy that you actually have to work to be that people respond to it.
Because it comes so seamless, you know, it comes like off. So like a great example that I can say from being younger that I've seen from experience with like friends and stuff is like, if you have like a guy friend, or even if it's yourself and you're like, I really want a girlfriend, you know, I want to go find like a great woman that I can hang out with. And you're on that search. It's like, it's for some reason you can't find her.
Yeah.
And then when you start being like, fuck it. I don't care, man. I put off this vibe of like, I don't care. I'm not fucking interested. I've tried for so long and had no success. I don't fucking care. Then all of a sudden
pops up,
women start coming up to you and you're like, what the fuck?
What the hell?
I've been searching for years. Haven't found anything. And the second I give up, but it's like, I think it's that kind of an idea where you can read off other people, and sure. you're drawn to whether it's power or drawn to someone who's not, doesn't care.
Yeah. That's a really tricky balance. I was actually thinking about this morning where I was thinking about, okay, we have to define ourselves as men or try to figure that out. But what's the main source of validation? Like, who are we looking to, or what are we looking to that tells us, yes, that's right, or no, that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is it? What, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I don't want to say it's just purely from a woman.
Yeah.
But some of it is.
Yeah. Right? I mean, probably most of mine is from my wife.
Yeah.
You know, that's if I'm providing and, you know, being a good person and being a good lover and all that type of stuff, and you get validation from that to me, that makes me feel like I'm on the right track.
Yeah.
But then there's also like your professional validation, your validation from like friends and family that you're a good person, or, you know, shit, I don't know. There's probably others, but
yeah. 'Cause I know you know, when I start to question myself, it's like, who's making these fucking rules that you're putting on yourself?
And I think you have to validate yourself a little bit, yeah. You know, it's
which I'm
like,
not
yeah,
good at.
And it always sounds kind of, you know, maybe kind of hokey, but it's like, you got to love yourself and validate yourself and trust in yourself, I think.
Yeah.
And believe in yourself. 'Cause otherwise it's like, what else is there? I guess
you're just going by what you think other people are thinking.
Yeah. And that's not a comfortable way to live or a fun way to live. 'Cause I've done that.
It's not realistic.
Yeah.
There's no way of telling. I don't know what you're thinking right now. I don't know what anybody's thinking about me.
And I lived that way. You know, when I was the kind of the beginning stuff we talked about, when I was in kind of more of a down spiral, I lived solely through what my peers thought of me.
Yeah.
Like that was, to me, was validation. Right. Yeah. So validation probably changes depending on what stage in your life you're in. But to me, it was like, am I cool? Am I hanging enough? Like it, you know, am I whatever?
And a lot of that comes from society telling you what cool is. Right.
And then I think I hit a stage where I was kind of like, well, I don't really give a shit what yeah. these guys think yeah. really, you know, like I do 'cause they're my friends, but sure. I let this define me for so long that it feels like wasted time now.
And that poses other challenges though too, that I don't think people understand. Like it was hard for me to not drink with my friends, and it's hard for yep. me to not smoke, and it was hard for me to be not give a fuck what they were doing and be other. It was hard for me to live outside of this male box
yep.
that's built for us.
Right.
And you kind of feel like, where's my community?
Yeah.
And you kind of wander a little bit. And I mean, that's difficult to do.
Sure.
Especially if you know, like if I didn't have a good dad, or if I didn't have a loving dad, like raising me, or loving grandparents or whatever, like if you're not receiving that love and then all of a sudden you're wandering and you feel other, I think that's where we've seen a lot of kids go astray.
Mm-hmm.
It's not easy. Even as an adult, it's still not easy.
And I think sometimes too, what we miss as kids, which I actually had, was like a role model who is not your parent.
Yeah.
That's closer to your age, you know, like, someone who's maybe in like that high school, college age, when you're in junior high or whatever, that is still close enough in age to you that you think they're cool and you respect them and kind of want to be them, and they're walking the right path.
Yeah.
And so you're like, I want to be like that.
Yeah.
And that's like kind of
like a peer mentor type thing.
Yeah. It's like, exactly.
Yeah.
But it like reinforces the values that your parents, you know, 'cause we all hit a stage where it's like, I don't care if my parents, what they say, I'm going to disagree with them because they're my fucking parents and I'm in my rebellion years.
This
right. But
guy.
If this dude or this woman yeah. tells me, then I'm going to be like, cool, I can get down with that. Even
yeah.
if my dad just told me the same thing and I didn't want to hear it, someone else who I think is cool and admire, you're going to be
point.
Like, yeah, cool, I can get down with that.
I like that. I hung out with my my friends quite a bit growing up over at their parents' house and partied with their families and hung out. So a lot of, especially their moms, I kind of took on my friends as moms as my mom.
Yep.
But they were like these other adults that were still great parents, loving parents, that I kind of took on as my own, but they weren't were my parents.
Right.
So whatever they kind of said too, I was like, yeah, go with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good point. Like, just having that non-parent, as ridiculous as it is, like, just because they're your parents, you don't listen to them. Well, that happens.
Yeah.
Having that other person is always good.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, there's always challenges of, like, kids getting ostracized and stuff like that.
Sure.
And don't have friends and don't have, you know, great parents. So,
yeah, for sure. And I went through a stage when I was younger, like in junior high, where I got picked on a bit, you know, and that sucks.
Yeah, it does. Really fucking sucks.
Like pretty hardcore. And then, which I've never really thought about it, but maybe that's why I got into more drinking and hanging out with those guys, because I wanted to be cool. And I being picked on and slammed into lockers when you're 12, 13 years old is traumatizing.
Boy, where do the limits of that stop? Where do the limits of like appeasing those people stop for boys?
Yeah, I don't.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you're like, all right, I don't want to get slammed into lockers. Well, I'll go drink with them.
Right.
It's like, well, but I wonder if.
And then you're like, yeah, I'm the cool kid. This is kind of nice. Like
yeah.
People like me. They're talking to me at school yeah. and getting invited to parties. And yeah, it's.
Do you feel that much as an adult now? And I know this might be different from you now that you're married, but like, or maybe pre-marriage, post-marriage, do you mm-hmm. still feel some of that? Like, well, I was invited to this get together, and if I don't go.
I did pre-marriage for sure. Like, yeah. I would go, if you asked me to do anything, I would just be like, yep, down, whatever. Yeah. I don't care. I'll do whatever. Especially if it was a lady.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
But now, not so much, I don't think. Like, now I'm a little bit, like, Jillian has really helped make me a little bit more confident in just standing up for, like, whatever
yep.
belief I have or. Just not being like a yes man. Like before someone might be like, hey, do you want to go, you know, do whatever with me? And I'd be like, yeah, that's fine. Even though I didn't really want to. And yeah. now I'm just like, you know, I don't really like, that doesn't mean I don't like you or that doesn't mean you're not my friend. It just means I don't want to go do what you're doing and that's
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like just the other night we were out having drinks with a bunch of, her coworkers and I was exhausted and I was like, I'm going to go home.
Oh.
And it's not like, well, what the fuck? Everyone's out here and you're supposed to stay out to impress people and yeah. like show that you can hang. It's just like, cool. I'll see you when I get home.
Well, that speaks to, I mean, Jillian's pretty cool. Sorry, Jillian is pretty cool. So, yeah. I mean, that probably speaks to a lot to her.
Yeah.
I mean, some of that, I mean, you could see where that could go the yeah. other way though with some, but I think is what that speaks to kind of brings a couple things to mind. Like A, do you think men really to be them best selves need a woman like that in their lives?
No, I don't think so.
No.
I think you need probably, I don't know that I have the answer to that. I think to be your best self, you probably need someone to confide in.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it has to be like a husband or wife or, you know, I think it could be whoever.
Sure.
But it probably helps to have someone that makes you feel a little bit more comfortable when you get to those points of feeling like anxiety or getting out of your comfort zone that can kind of ground you down and be like, hey, it's not that deep. Like yeah. just relax a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah.
So it probably helps to have someone. I don't know if it's necessary.
Sure. Yeah. And I just remember, I recently read this article. I don't remember if it was on Vice or something. They interviewed this guy who's 108 years old. And they were, of course, like, is one of those longevity things where like, well, what's the success? How did you get to be 108? You know, it wasn't like, oh, I ate 3 eggs a day, raw, fucking drank kale smoothies my whole life. No, it was like I had a good woman in my life.
Yeah.
And I got to thinking about that a little bit. And then what you said about Jillian, it's like, oh, if you want to leave, just leave. And I think, at least for me, you know, it seems like men just need to be calmed down a little bit or have that person just to be like, dude, you do you. That's,
yeah.
That's cool. I'm cool with that.
Yeah. You hit the nail on the head for me. I mean, the biggest thing that I have problems with still, which it's obviously you worked with me, so you know this, is being reactive and keeping my emotions in check. Yeah. You know, it's like if something is not going my way, you can see it on my face immediately. And yeah. I've been trying to work on that. And I also get stressed out and worked up fairly easily
yeah.
on minor things. And I've been trying to get out of that, especially because when I was younger, I wasn't like that. I used to be like super relaxed, like whatever, I don't care. You like, it doesn't matter. We can do whatever you want. Like it's all good. And now it's like, if something doesn't go my way, it makes me mad.
Yeah.
or, you know, maybe not necessarily mad, but it like,
no, I'm with you.
It just frustrates me. Yeah. It's like, God damn it.
I wear that too. I wear that.
Yeah. I wear it all over my face. I get told that all the time.
Yep.
But Jillian always will just be like, take it down a notch. Like, it's not that deep, yeah. Like relax. And yeah. It's, and I have that trust in her that she has my best interest in mind. So where if another person said, chill the fuck out, I get defensive.
I was going to say.
But if Jillian says, chill out, dude, then it's like, okay, you're right.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to say the same thing, like probably not for you now, a little bit more. We've got to know each other a little bit. But if you would come to me like early on and say, hey, bro, like chill out, I'd probably be like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
What do you mean chill out? I'm fine.
Right.
You know, then I would have got defensive.
Sure.
But having that. And maybe that's just for all guys. If they would say that to me, I'd be like, fuck you, buddy.
It might be, probably, you know, and like, I think getting defensive is it's to an extent like an innate characteristic of men.
I'm not weak.
Yeah.
I'm not weak.
What do you mean chill out? Fuck you. You want to fight?
Let's go.
What?
I don't care.
That escalated rather quickly.
It's like that episode of South Park when Stan's dad's always taking off his shirt. Yeah. It's like, come on. Want to go?
Come on. Yeah. So that's probably like my biggest thing I've been working on lately is trying to, when I feel myself getting fired up, it's like we talked about earlier of recognizing it.
Yeah.
And being like, is this worth potentially saying something that I shouldn't or offending someone that I don't intend to, all for the sake of being right, sure, quote unquote, or not, you know, just for the sake of who knows what.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking to my buddy about that a little bit, just about my feelings. I was talking to him a little bit about that today, about just how I'm feeling about things. And he's like, oh, I just think you're overthinking it.
Yeah.
I'm like, maybe, but I think I need to be thinking about it. I need to be more mindful of this feeling to address it.
Well, but I think there's a difference between being mindful and conscious of thought.
Yeah.
Versus maybe like overthinking or overanalyzing.
Sure.
Because I do that. You know, I tend to overanalyze a lot where I'm like, I could go down door A, B, C, D. I have every possible outcome mapped out in my mind. It makes me kind of anxious, whatever. Or I think there's just like, hey, I'm having these thoughts. Are these valid? Or am I just getting in my own head? You know, and I think that's kind of a differentiator for me is sometimes I get in my own head and I get anxious and then it's like, wait. Maybe let's just focus on like step one and I'm already on like step seven.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like step one through six hasn't happened yet and probably might go just perfectly and I don't need to worry about step seven.
Yeah.
So it's like, don't get too caught up on something that might not even happen.
Sure. Well, some of it too, what I was explaining was like how my personality type and how I thrive and stuff like that. And I'm like, I've done all this work to figure it out and I'm still working on it. And he's like, you're overthinking it. It's like, I think we need to be thinking about that sort of thing more. But in a moment like you were just describing, I probably do overthink things quite a bit.
And I think it's tough because, you know, I'm the same way. Like I'm super, can be kind of vulnerable sometimes and also can be like really worrisome of what people think of me. Even though, of course, I've got like, we want to put off a facade of like, I'm cool, relax, like I don't give a fuck. But I get super self-conscious a lot about stuff. And I think there, like, it almost, you have to come to a point where you just accept the fact that like, we don't know as human beings why we're here or really what our purpose is. Like from a scientific basis, our purpose is probably just to inhabit the earth for a finite amount of time and then become extinct.
Yeah.
Right. And so part of living a joyful life, I think, at least for me, has like a tiny bit of it is coming to grips with the fact that you're never going to know what your purpose is on life. And so you just have to make the best of it.
Oh, this whole thing is out of control.
Yeah.
We're on a spinning fucking rock going around the sun. Yeah. Asteroid could slam into us in any moment. It's like, there is no control over this.
Exactly.
You know, and I'm definitely self-conscious. Like, oh, it's not what do people think about me, but what are they going to think if I do X, Y, and Z, or if I say this or that. And a lot of the time it just makes me do nothing.
Sure. Like same with me. And it could be professionally, or it could also be like the super minute, stupid shit where like Jillian will give me shit all the time because I'll take like forever to do something stupid, like do my hair.
Yeah.
You know? And she's like, no one gives a fuck what your hair looks like, but you think they do, you know? And she just laughs at me and I'm like, what do you think about it like this?
Yeah.
You know, especially like when I've been growing it out.
Yeah, I know.
You go through the phase where it looks like shit. Or like, you know, like I've always been that dude. My buddies used to give me so much shit when we were kids that would like, we'd go out on Friday night and we'd all like meet over at my house and I would change outfits three times. You know, and they're like, why are you changing your fucking outfit,
yeah.
dude?
Yeah, you're going to spill beer all over that
anyway. I didn't feel good about myself in it.
No, I mean, I'm definitely in the same way. I mean, skinny runner guy. So it's like, I mean, I definitely have body self-conscious issues where it's like, you know, I don't want to take my shirt off. It's like, I'm a skinny dude and I'm not buff looking. And it's like, I'll just hang out over here. And, you know, that sucks. And that's like shitty, not shitty, but it's like, it's hard to admit, but.
No, I'm the same way. Happens. I mean, I had an opposite growing up where I went through a couple year phase where I got up to like 215 pounds
oh, wow.
and quit working out completely, ate all fast food, sat on the couch, like just watched movies, and got poked fun at a lot for it, for getting kind of fat. And that's why I think probably I'm so addicted to working out now is because I don't, that made me like super self-conscious.
Sure. Well, it's amazing too for, I don't know, can't really speak to women on this one, but at least me as a guy, I've had many people come up to me and say, oh, you're skinny. It's like, is that a compliment?
Yeah. Right.
It doesn't make me feel good actually when you say that to me.
Yeah.
That's a hard one to deal with sometimes.
Yep.
And obviously the reverse is true if you fat shame somebody, but
yeah, it goes both ways. Yeah. People should just not be such dicks.
I know. It's just like, hey, Brad. It can end there. It doesn't have to go much further than that, but you know, you get these comments and it perpetuates into more insecurity. But
I think with our like with pop culture in the US has gotten so out of control too, as far as like the celebrity and all that, that it's like I find myself spending 6 days a week in the gym. And granted, like I eat pretty healthy, but I still drink some beers, and so I could probably have a six pack if I wanted, but yeah. I would rather drink a six pack.
Sure.
So it's a compromise. But I find myself like in the summers being like, fuck man, I want to go to the beach and like, I don't have a six pack. And I know all the fucking dudes that I'm going with have six packs.
Oh, sure. They're all ripped. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
You know?
Yeah. Do you spoke, so I know you're a vegan.
Yep.
I have had, I don't countless number of people, like you see the way I eat.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, you're a vegan. And I have a reaction to it.
Yeah, I don't like the word vegan.
I have like this, I'm like, no, I'm not a vegan. Yeah. I'm not a vegan. I eat fish.
Yeah.
Sometimes I eat
cheese once a year.
I eat eggs every morning.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know why I have that reaction. Maybe internally it's like, well, that's not a manly thing to do.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever thought about that? Or have you ever struggled with that sort of thing around your eating?
I've definitely struggled with the word vegan. Like, I don't even like using it.
It's got a connotation to it, man.
Yeah, it's a negative connotation. People think it's weird still.
I mean,
not as much in Portland, but I just like to tell people I eat mostly plants.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm on a plant-based
because
diet.
Because I do. Like, occasionally we eat seafood and cheese a couple times a year or whatever.
We'll go to Zurich and you're eating sausage. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not vegan.
Yeah.
But it's, but it definitely kind of, I don't like the reaction to have, but it does make me feel a little...
I guess one thing that I really have enjoyed about the process, because we started about 8 years ago, coming from the Midwest where we grew up, our family thought it was real fucking weird.
Well, fuck, I was going to ask you about the whole barbecue scene there, because I mean, that's like...
It's the best.
Yeah, dude.
So our family, they were super supportive, but they thought it was very strange. They didn't also understand it. You know, they'd cook veggies with butter and cheese and be like, this is vegan?
Yeah.
And you're like, it's not.
It's actually the opposite.
Yeah. But now I think it's been a really rewarding experience because a lot of our family will eat vegan stuff when we go out and they love it.
Yeah.
It's like they got over the part that it's just like, we just don't eat meat.
It's just,
it's okay.
It doesn't have meat or animal products.
And I actually find it to be the opposite with what you said about like being a man and eating meat. Yeah. In a weird way, I don't know how to explain it. It makes me feel more manly not eating meat.
Hmm.
Because it's like taking my own, let's see, what's the right way to put it? Like, it's forging my own path.
It's
and
like an empowerment thing.
It is. It kind of feels empowering to say, like, I don't need to kill another animal to be healthy. And, you know, like with working out and health, I could probably put on muscle more quickly if I ate meat. But I'm still like, I'm not a scrawny little guy.
No,
you know,
but you're also not indignant about being a vegan.
Yeah, sure.
You're just not like, oh, salmon, where'd you get that fucking salmon? You kill that animal? You know what I mean? Like,
well, the funny thing about that, the reason I'm not that way is because when I started the diet, it was for my thesis in college and it was to look at the effects of eating a plant-based diet on coronary artery disease.
Yeah.
So it started from a health standpoint because there are a few like heart issues on my dad's side of the family. And I was like, you know, started reading about it and it seemed like there was a lot of correlations between health and a whole foods plant-based diet. Sure. So to me, it wasn't like save the animals. Not that I was ever like murder all the animals.
It was like not die of a heart attack.
Yeah. I was like, I don't want to die of a heart attack or have I had like my cholesterol was 220 when I started it.
Oh,
and
really?
I dropped it down to 113 milligrams in less than a month.
Oh geez.
Yeah.
So you're predisposed.
Yep.
To that, to
well, to an extent, problems. But I also just ate like shit. Yeah. I ate, literally ate fast food every meal for a long time.
So good.
It's so good.
Oh, man. Come on.
Preaching to the choir.
Come on, man. I mean, you've seen me eat a lot of plants and just veggies and shit, but God damn it.
I love it. We have some good friends here. We'll go eat like, cause you know, just cause you eat vegan is not healthy.
Oh no.
Like there's a couple really great like vegan comfort food spots. In Portland.
Yeah. There's a vegan. I just saw it on like Thrillist today. They're like, there's this vegan barbecue spot.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Homegrown smoker.
Yeah. That's it.
It's the best. It's so legit. But we have some good friends where we're like, oh, Fat Ty's coming out today.
That's funny.
But yeah, it's been an interesting process.
Food is just a weird thing though, man.
Yeah.
It's funny how people can try to define you by what you eat.
Yeah.
And I'm literally sitting there telling them like, no, I just find this as fuel.
Yeah.
I have a sensitive stomach and it works for me.
Yeah.
But I'm still Brad.
I think like probably some people don't understand it. I think it's a cultural thing with meat, you know. Yeah. We're all raised to just eat meat. And I think for some people it makes them uncomfortable and maybe makes them feel not so good about themselves.
Yeah.
When they think about the fact that, and I could be way off, but I think there's probably a handful of people that it makes them think poorly or feel badly about themselves and the fact that they're killing an animal to eat and you're not. But you're still healthy. So like, wait, why the fuck am I killing an animal then?
I think you said something that's really, really hard to remember in a moment, that a lot of the times when people are saying, oh, you're a vegan, they're questioning themselves.
Yeah.
Not questioning you.
Yeah.
That's a really hard thing to remember, but I think it's a great point where it's like, they're actually asking that because they're self-conscious about their own diet.
Yeah. And I remember in college, I worked in bars and restaurants when I was going through college. And before I started the thesis my junior year, and before that, I ate meat every meal, like, you know, like whatever, how I was raised. And I remember being a waiter at a restaurant and people saying, oh, I'm vegan, and literally going back to the kitchen and saying, number one, what the fuck does that mean? You know, like, I don't know what that means. Number two, why would you eat like that?
Yeah.
You know, that's so unhealthy.
Yeah.
Right. So it's easy. I'm really glad, like with the way that I eat, that I wasn't raised that way, because it gives me the perspective of like, I get it.
Yeah.
I was that way. And I know how good meat tastes. Like, I grew up in barbecue capital of the world, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I know how good that shit is, but it's also been fun as really enjoying cooking to learn how to make alternative versions of some of those dishes
you
and make
to.
Them pretty damn well.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever made I made a Alfredo sauce out of cauliflower?
Yeah. Yeah. Cauliflower, cashews. Yep. And yeah, it's crazy.
It sounds crazy, but like if you do it right, it's pretty fucking good.
Really good.
Yeah. It's kind of, I don't know. Cooking is another thing that it's like takes patience, but it's also like,
that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
I almost went to culinary school before college.
Did you?
Yeah. I love cooking. And like, I find it super relaxing.
Super. Put on a podcast, music.
Even just, like, I love music or podcasts, but even in silence, like,
that's good too.
I think people think this doesn't make sense necessarily, but like, after a really stressful day, to cook like a gourmet meal that takes hours to prepare is the most soothing, relaxing thing to me.
That first bite is so
fucking good. Unless it doesn't come out well, then you're just like, fuck.
Yeah.
But I can't win at anything today.
When it does, that first bite,
yeah, you're just like, ah. So, and that's the process I love. Like, I really worked on honing my knife skills and stuff like that, and I love the process of like preparing the veggies and cutting everything.
Yeah I do the that's interesting. I do the same after I run in the morning, where it was like, you know, it might be cold and I'm still wet, but I'm like still taking my time to make a really good meal.
Yeah.
Hot meal, like usually just eggs and veggies, like a stir fry or whatever, and God, it tastes so good, and I appreciate it so much more.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, food's an interesting one. Cool. So I've gotten questions from our female listeners.
Okay.
And I go through two of them with each of my guests.
Okay.
Little thing I called "What Women Wonder." So the first one is what are you scared of?
Well, literally, fucking snakes.
Like terrified.
Terrified. Right. That's the only thing I'm really terrified of when it comes to like actual fears. Snakes are just like just seeing one in like TV.
Yeah.
Can't do it. But going a little deeper, which I imagine is the point of the question.
It's whatever you want it to be, man.
I guess maybe I'm scared of not being good enough, you know, which I think is why that could be on personal life or work, but I think that's why sometimes I can be taken as such a as being so intense sometimes is because I'm really afraid of failure. You know, I want to be good at what I do, and I want to be accepted, you know, and I want people when they, you know, think of me to be like, that's a straight, like a stand-up dude who would always be there for you if you need him, but also is like super good at his job and, you know, doesn't take life too seriously. Yeah. So not living up to that, I think, scares me.
Yeah.
And then like in the last couple of years, I guess, since like the kids have started to come up as being plausible in the future.
Yeah.
It doesn't make me like anxious, but it makes me a little nervous of just like not being a good enough dad.
Yeah.
But I think having like the support of an awesome loving wife and knowing, like we talked about earlier, that really you're just a human being that's winging it and trying to figure it out as you go, that makes me feel like, in a strange way, it makes me more comfortable about going into that, of being like, nobody knows how to do this.
Right.
So let's give it my best go.
Well, dude, all the things that, what I've seen from you and all the things you said, I think you'll be great, a great dad, you know, just super laid back and just loving and just understanding that, yeah, dude, little kid, you're going to fuck up. I'm going to fuck up.
Yep.
It's all right.
It's all good.
We'll get through it together. And I'm going to be here for you. Sorry.
Yeah. And the funny thing too is that I don't always have very much patience for adults, but I have endless amounts of patience for kids. And I don't know why that is. If it's just because they're young and that I kind of know that they don't necessarily know better.
Fucking adults should know better.
But yeah, so with adults, I don't have a lot of patience. Yeah. But with kids, it's like, yeah, it's all good, man. You're just a little kid.
So funny, because I fucking hate stupid questions from people. Yeah. It's like, I know you know the answer.
Right.
Have you looked?
Have you Googled it?
Yeah, but a little kid or something like that, it's like, oh, come here, let me help you out.
Yeah.
Let's figure it out together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, I think it's... it's much of the same where I get frustrated because I think I can always do better.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that I'm not doing as well as I can.
Yeah.
And that bleeds over into so many areas of my life. It's like, am I being a good friend? Am I being a good uncle? Which it's like, am I even around? Am I being a good brother? Am I living up to what my dad wanted me to be?
Right.
You know, I read those journals and it's like, fuck, he gave so much up for me. Am I doing him right? Yeah, that's a hard one. So, I mean,
I think the fact that you pose the question to yourself and the fact that you're just trying in general means that you are.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess number one, you have to understand you'll never know, which is a very tough thing. But even like with my dad, are you really going to know if you live up to what they want you to be? Probably not.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times you sit down and you're like, have I just been everything you've ever wanted?
Yeah. Like, I guess you would never say that in
selfish person.
Yeah, that's a funny point. Like you would never actually ask that in person probably.
Right.
And so the expectation.
So it's an interesting question of like, I don't know if any of us would ever know that necessarily. And of course your parents will be like, oh, we're so proud of you. But yeah. I'm always the one, like my mom's like, we're so proud of you. And it's like,
ugh. Really?
I just don't want to hear it. I don't like that.
Yeah. Get away from me.
Yeah. It's funny too. Like it depends on, like what we were saying earlier,
It's like sometimes just people don't realize how much a thank you goes. And then when you hear it, you're like, ew.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear that. I don't want a pat on the back. It makes me uncomfortable.
I'm really bad at it. Yeah. I'm bad at like taking the compliment. Yeah. I'm just like, no, it was no big deal. And I just, you know, I'm just doing my job.
Yeah, right.
I'll just be over here if you need me.
Exactly.
Fears are, facing them is hard, but it's good too, I think.
Yep.
So a little bit lighter of a question here. Chick flicks. Do you like them?
Yes.
Okay. So the question was worded as like, the question is funny how it's worded. Are you lying if you say you don't like them?
I would say most likely, yes, you are.
For most men, but I'm with you where I will sit down alone and watch Definitely Maybe with Ryan Reynolds any day of the week.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
My favorite is probably The Devil's Worst Prada. I really like that movie.
Great movie from start to finish.
Yeah. I also really like that movie.
Meryl Streep is a revelation in that.
It's just so good. The one with The Intern, I think is what it is. With Robert De Niro and...
I don't know if I ever watched it.
It's pretty good. It's on HBO. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, all the Ryan Reynolds movies are pretty good.
The one with him and Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, where she's his
was
boss.
The Engagement? Is that what
the Engagement.
Yeah, yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard of it.
Yeah.
I'm just
kidding. Yeah, I've heard like 90 minutes of it.
I've just read about all
it.
These movies.
Kind of watched like 90 of 95 minutes of it or so.
No, man, I don't give a shit. I like those kind of movies.
I know, me too. I don't know why there's an assumption that...
Well, I think that for me... It's really easy. Like life is so stressful as it is.
Exactly.
That, man, it's like when I watch TV, I want to watch a comedy or I want to watch just like
movie.
Something that makes you feel good.
Yep. Put on Kung Fu Panda or something like that. I'm digging it, man.
And I also love sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, it's like, man, after a long day, I just want to watch something that's relaxing.
I know.
And funny. And yeah, there's like a love story in it. Great.
Yeah. So just ladies, don't make us feel weird about it.
Yeah.
We like it. Okay. Don't make us feel weird about it. Just embrace it and let us watch it, okay? Crack the rosé and let's go to town on some Ryan Reynolds movies.
Exactly.
Okay. That's a good one. Then I have two quick questions.
Okay.
Or actually three. Let's see if we can get through these. They're kind of lightning round. If you could travel back in time to visit your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
Get your shit together.
I like it. The greatest lesson that you've learned from your dad, either what not to do or what to do.
Holy greatest lesson I've learned from my dad. Jeez, that's a tough one. That could go deep. I could probably think of a lot, but
sure.
Probably with my parents going through a divorce and some of my younger years where I was very pliable and I would say that he really taught me that no matter what is thrown at you, it's your job to step up and take action and make the best of it and make sure that if you have people that you need to take care of, that you take care of them. And also probably one of the things he's really taught me is family's family no matter what. And the reason I would say that is because we went through a phase where we just hardly didn't even talk.
Sure.
I would probably say at one point that I hated him, you know, if you would have asked me. And when I was ready to re-engage that relationship, it was like, no questions asked. This is good. Like, let's talk it out and let's figure it out. Yeah. So that was, that's another thing I think that he's taught me.
Those are great.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. And then finally, if you could live the life of one man, real or fiction, who would it be and why?
God.
If you could live
I can go serious or not
serious.
Can
go whichever way you want it.
Man, to be honest, I've always, ever since I was a little kid, I've idolized Bob Marley.
I love it.
And I would love to fucking live in his shoes. I have a fucking quote of his tattooed on my back.
That's great.
And a Rastafarian lion. I used to always, when I was a kid, if people would be like, if you could go back in time, what would you do? And I'd be like, I would go to a Bob Marley concert. And just hang out with him and just listen to his music.
We can get pretty close to that in Portland.
Yeah, right. No, but I mean, I think I fell in love with him because of his music when I was young. Like, I just love, like, I went through this huge reggae phase and I was like, this is the greatest music of all time. It's like such a great beat, but it's also has like the lyrics and it's like stands for something. And then as I got older and really learned about like
him as a man
and what he did. And yeah, he had some downfalls with like his family and stuff. But, as far as the steps that he took, you know, to dig into a lot of fucked up things that were going on in that region of the world, changed a lot of people's lives and is really revolutionary. I mean, there's no one on earth who, if you say who's Bob Marley, they don't know who he is.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of people like that.
Right. He definitely crosses cultures and crosses boundaries. And that's a pretty good one.
And it's even like, even as growing up as like a white kid in the suburbs, you still like find a commonality with a guy like that.
Sure.
Even though he came from the slums of Jamaica, like zero similarities between our upbringing, obviously, you know, but it's like when he talks about, you know, standing up and fighting for your rights and, you know, how horrible slavery and things like that are, it's like, it always just resonated with me.
Yeah.
So I always looked up to him and as like his music and
not a bad role model to have as a man.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, my friends and I were Rastafarians for one summer.
You know, that reminds me on how much shit we did when we were young would not fly today.
Yeah, right.
Oh my God.
We literally grew out dreads and we would tell people like, yeah, we can't cut our hair. It's our religion. You know, just like fucking idiots.
Those were different times, man.
Yeah.
Different time.
Yeah. But yeah, it was good.
Cool, brother. Well, thanks for joining me.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, dude. That was fun.
Cool. Do it again.
Perfect.
Conversations like these that kind of remind me of why I think men need to talk to other men to understand really how similar we are and how similar our experiences of becoming a man can be. It just seems like we're also often closed off from each other, that we don't realize that we're all kind of struggling with the same things. And it'd be nice to open up and talk to somebody else about it, just like Ty did. Thank you for that, Ty. The conversation, listening back, just made me really start questioning when we go to define what it means to be a man. Who are we doing it for? Are we doing it for ourselves? Are we doing it for loved ones? Both, maybe? Is there something else? And I think that's an important question to ask because, you know, personally, what makes me feel like a man is going to be much different from what makes other guys feel like a man. And that's something to really consider, because if we're going to try to define what it is to be a man, we got to realize that there isn't one definition of it. There's just, I can't point to one thing and say this is what a man is, because it's going to be different for everybody. And I think in talking to Ty, he made me realize that that's okay. You know, when I look at Ty and the person he is, he's so self-aware. He's super humble. We were talking about the Instagram thing, and the dude is just full of heart. And I just love that about him. He kind of knows what he wants to be, but he embraces it fully and just says, this is me, you know, take it or leave it. I love myself. He's not a dick, as we kind of said there at the end. I mean, and even if it isn't viewed as traditionally masculine, he still just embraces it as who he wants to be. And I think what that does is that gives him that personal sovereignty, that opens him up, that makes him live a little bit more lightly, a little bit more free. And maybe that's part of the key when we try to define what it is to be a man. We just try to get out there and don't be a dick and be exactly who we want to be, as long as we're not harming others. And I think when you're able to do that and give yourself permission to do that, it really opens things up for you. Just something I'll ponder, and I'll probably listen back to this episode a couple times just to really let that sink in. And yeah, this was a really important conversation to me, and I hope you all enjoyed it. Big thanks again to Ty Sorensen. Love you, buddy. Put his Instagram in the show notes in case you want to go check out what Ty's doing. And just pop over and say thank you to him for joining me. Again, ladies, you can send me your questions for What Women Wonder. Funny questions, deep questions, or somewhere in between, you can email those mmprojectpod@gmail.com. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. That would really help me out. That's episode number 2, y'all, in the books. Until next time, be present, stay open, much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts, and had to think about it, and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough. To see.